Place to Be Nation, welcome back and join us once again on the highway to the Impact Zone. I am Goldie's Dirty Little Bitch and your host, Logan Croslin, and I want to thank you for joining us for our second monthly pay-per-view on our journey, Turning Point, in 2004. And hey guys, if you didn't know, it takes place on December 5th, 2004. As if they didn't beat that over our heads enough on the way here. But let me now bring in my co-host and student on this journey, Jake Williams. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good, Logan. Peacock's not slowing us down because we're talking TNA. So we have access to everything.
Hell yeah. We're all good.
Nothing censored. Nothing getting censored either.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not on the show for sure. And I feel like tonight's going to be a real turning point for the pod. Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it'd be a real turning point December 5th, 2004, if you ask me.
And now, as usual, we'll bring in our experts, and since it's a pay-per-view, we'll have our special guest. But firstly, he is captain of the Chicken Salad Express, and he is the biggest WrestleMania 17 truther I know. Ben Locke, how you doing, Ben?
This is going to be a massive turning point for our relationship, Logan. I am very well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, man.
I feel like the last 6 to 7 months of this pod, we have been waiting for an actual good show to come along, and here we are.
Yeah.
I mean, a TNA show, not this podcast.
I got you. Yeah, I was going to say, we've watched some pretty good shows lately, so I guess we had to kind of keep it going with this one. So, secondly, we'll bring in my best pal and the guy who may very well give tonight's main event 10 stars, Lewis Maynard. How you doing, Lewis?
I'm doing amazing, and I'm looking forward to this so much. Sean Kidd, if you're listening, just get your heart medication ready, because I'm killing you tonight, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not good if you don't give him a little bit of a palpitation, at least. Now we'll bring in our special guests that we have for our pay-per-views. This guy can be heard on Blockbuster Rewind and Pop Goes to the Couch, and he might quite possibly be our biggest fan, Scott Shiflett. How you doing, Scott?
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Glad to be here tonight, gents. Or as I should say with this opening video, thank you. Thank you very much.
Exactly. with our first-time guest, Scott, I'll stick with you. What were your experiences with TNA coming into this pod? Did you watch back in the day or anything like that?
Yeah, I watched when they came to Spike for the first time. I knew it was on like the Fox Sports Nation one, but I was in high school when that was dropping on Friday, so I was ripping and running the roads. So like I always followed on the internet, so like I knew who AJ Styles was, but I didn't really know who the rest of them were. But like I became fans of AJ Styles and Monty Brown, and hate Jeff Jarrett just like everyone else.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll welcome you with open arms on the Jeff Jarrett hate for sure. we'll go on into our show now. We won't waste any more time, and we'll head on into Turning Point, where we open with an absolutely ridiculous video package, and we would expect no less, where we kind of switch back and forth between the Kings of Wrestling kind of, quote-unquote, driving to the arena in a car dressed up as Elvis. They're all dressed up as Elvis, and they're insulting their kind of insulting their opponents back and forth. And then they kind of switch back and forth to Styles, Hardy, and Randy Savage kind of being real serious about how much they respect each other and how bad they're going to kick the Kings of Wrestling's ass tonight. After this, we're then welcomed into the arena where Tanay we actually get a pretty good pyro display to start off the show here tonight. Today and Wes kind of discuss the matches that we're going to see, kind of focusing on the X Division title match and the Six Sides of Steel between AMW and Triple X. But before we move on to our first match, Jake, what'd you kind of think of the opening package with the Kings of Wrestling and Styles, Hardy, and Savage?
All right. Some incredible green screen work there by TNA on them. It took me a while to figure out whether or not they were really driving the car or not. Yeah, it was not where I was expecting them to go with the Kings of Wrestling thing. And we'll get to it later, but I guess I kind of thought, okay, well, this is just a goofy video package. But as we're going to see, they are pretty committed to this whole Elvis aesthetic, as we're going to see later in the show. Other than that, yeah, and I also thought that AJ and Jeff did not sound like particularly, like, not the two strongest guys on the mic at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if Jeff ever is, but I think AJ would probably get better throughout his career. But they kind of just seem like real wooden, and it makes them look especially like cornballs whenever, like, the Kings of Wrestling are acting so goofy, like, on purpose, and then they're acting serious. It just makes them seem like they're taking it too seriously. It was all weird. They all look like, the Kings of Wrestling all look like they have the Brother Love makeup on, because they're all red as fuck. you know, just a very just strange. Red. It looked really, yeah, like it all just, it was very campy, just a very odd way to, it's like typical of them with TNA, in that they never know really, like, tonally where they're coming from, because sometimes they want to be super serious, and sometimes they want to open the pay-per-view with this dumb shit, so it's very confusing sometimes where they're coming from, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, if I had bought this and saw this to start off with, I might have turned it off, I won't lie to you. but Ben, what'd you think of this opening spot with the Kings of Wrestling?
I will agree with Jake, because you've got to admire their commitment to the role, haven't you? They've fully embraced this King's nickname. That's something. And yeah, I think we know in a couple of cases that they would certainly have been baked behind the wheel. But yeah, it was typical TNA ridiculousness. But like I say, they were at least buying into it.
Yeah, that's the commitment to the gimmick is commendable for sure. But Lewis, what'd you think?
Honestly, I hated this opening. It's one of the few things from this pay-per-view that I actually didn't like. Because, like, it makes Jeff, AJ, and Macho Man just look like jackasses, that they're trying to have this very serious promo. And then you cut to the old farts in the car just cracking jokes. And, like, Scott Hall at one point starts to say a joke and then, like, turns back to Jeff and, like, oh, I can't say that. Like, completely breaks character. At the end, they do, like, the fakest evil laugh. And you know, like, whoever's directing the promo says, all right, guys, give me a good evil laugh. And then Nash and Hall are like, nah, we're just going to phone this in like we phone everything in. It was, I don't know. It was not a great way to start the show. And if you're going to do it, just have the, like, Kings of Wrestling in the car do that side of the promo. Don't have the serious stuff on the other side, because it just doesn't mesh well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the Kings of Wrestling part of it is okay, but, like, don't kind of counteract it with the other side, because it just makes those guys look like they're stiffs and just, you know, they don't really go into the stupidity that the Kings of Wrestling do. But Scott, what'd you think of this opening package?
Well, guys, I'm going to let you all know that I actually watched the wrong opening for the package, and I was like, why are they not talking about the Kings of Wrestling on this? And they were talking about how AJ could have been an Olympian, and it was for another pay-per-view, so I had to back away. I was like, God, what the hell am I getting myself into? And then, like, I switched over, and I actually enjoyed the Kings of Wrestling stuff, because Nash had a good line about Macho. He said he used to snap into meat products, and I don't know why, that just tickled me to no end. AJ was wearing stuff that made him look like he was, like, in a porno from the early 2000s. That's the way he was dressed.
That's his general aesthetic, honestly.
Like, I guess you guys are used to it, but I was watching this, and I was like, oh, when's Johnny Sins going to walk in? But at the very end there, they allude to Scott Hall drinking and driving, because he's swerving all over the roads. And, like, from someone who remembers WCW, where in, like, 1999, he had, like, 4 DUIs, it's like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the joke that, like, he turns back to Jeff Jarrett in the promo and says, oh, I can't say that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that little rib in there that he got a bunch of DUIs is pretty funny. But, yeah, it's really stupid, but I think Lewis is kind of right. If you just do the Kings of Wrestling thing, I think it works, but it kind of makes Styles, Hardy, and Savage kind of look like stiffs and kind of makes them look stupid.
Well, Macho also looks woefully out of place here. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like the guy who's 30 years old still hanging out with high schoolers. That's what he looks like.
Yeah, I was gonna say it gets even it's even worse in the match later, but he's terribly out of place during this time period. But after we go from Tanae and West, we go back to a limo that arrives, and Vince McMahon, and I'm doing the bunny ears, the quote-unquote Vince McMahon and Triple H show up, and they are greeted with balloons and cookies from Abyss, who eventually does his little taunt and scares them off, and they run away. But just absolutely absurd that Vince and Triple H came to see the show tonight. But we'll go straight from there into our first match, and it is for the tag team titles. It's Three Live Crew versus Team Canada. They kind of have, or they do the usual championship match, little points that they make before the match. One of them is the rematch from Victory Road, kind of talking about how this is the first time they've kind of faced each other since Three Live Crew won the tag titles at Victory Road. Can Canada handle the truth? When Three Live Crew won the titles, it was Conan and BG, but this time Truth is in the match because Conan suffered a shoulder injury. And then the last one is, will youth be served or will experience roll? BG welcomes us into the salt and pepper sandbox, and then he says some old age poo-poo as per usual. So he gets a little old age poo-poo up in there. But once the match starts, it's Young and BG in the ring. The crowd really gets under the skin of the Canadians at the very beginning of the match with a loud USA chant. Young gets a few early shots in, but BG quickly turns things around and eventually ends up decking Young when Young attempts to kind of imitate his little shimmy punches that he does. 3LK goes from there and does basically like the what's up move that the Dudleys do, but instead of a headbutt, they do a leg drop to the balls. Young then tags in Rude. Rude uses his power early to, but Truth's speed eventually gets too much for him. Truth then tags in BG, and they double team Rude, and Truth actually gets a shot in on Eric Young. BG then quickly tags Truth back in as they continue to kind of wear down Rude. Young eventually distracts Truth and on the top rope, where Rude is able to actually crotch him. Team Canada then double teams Truth, kind of working over his back with a series of backbreakers. Rude gets a few brutal knees in and then hits a nice back suplex. Young then gets tagged in and puts the boots to Truth in the corner, but gets a little too cocky and celebrates, only for Truth to climb the top rope and hit a missile dropkick. Rude is then able to tag and prevent Truth from making a tag temporarily, but Team Canada kind of botches the what's up move that they had done, that 3LK had done earlier, kind of allowing Truth to get the tag. James then comes in, a house of fire, kind of decking both Team Canada members with punches and backdrops. Truth then comes in without getting tagged and gives it to Eric Young in the corner, eventually hitting an axe kick while EY is kind of hanging from the top rope. BG and Rude then come back in, where Rude hits a really nice spine buster, but only gets two on that. 3LK kind of hit their double team finisher, where BG holds him up, and Killings does the axe kick, but Damore actually sneaks in and distracts the ref. Damore continues to distract the ref, and this allows Johnny Devine to come in with the hockey stick and nails BG, and Rude covers BG for the victory. So Team Canada is once again our tag team champions. Jake, what'd you think of this opening match?
Yeah, you know, it was pretty solid, considering we normally like crap on all these 3LK matches. Obviously, we don't have Conan, so it kind of changes the whole dynamic of this for the better. I could not believe that. So I'm thinking, you know, okay, Conan's not here. We don't have to listen to him say the exact same thing that he says identically every show, but then BG does it for him. So we still have to hear Conan's stupid bullshit, even when Conan's not here, which sucked. But it was a pretty good match. I thought the action was pretty smooth, good breakups throughout, and it just all flowed pretty well. We've said it before, we really like Truth, and he's very underutilized, especially considering the two other guys in this team. And so I thought it kind of helps BG to not be like, because normally BG is almost like the stronger worker of the two, which is not good. And so you could kind of just have him come in there, and when he's just in there for, you know, short spurts, it's not as grating on you when it's between him and Conan, like dominating guys. And so you kind of have Truth come in there, and he's a lot more fun to watch. And it was you know, common for Team Canada to get the interference. It's almost like expected at this point that Team Canada, unless you know they're getting squashed or, you know, they're just fodder, they're probably going to win via some kind of interference. But I thought it was a perfectly acceptable tag match. So I went 2.5. Maybe the greatest 3LK match we've ever seen.
Yeah, I would say that it's pretty impressive that they actually had a pretty good match here with Team Canada. But I'll give Team Canada a lot of props on that one. But Ben, what do you think of this opening contest? Ben?
I think Ben had to restart his computer. I think he.
Okay, I got you. All right, Lewis.
I was going to say I'm back, but I'm good to Lewis.
Okay. Yeah, Lewis, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is going to be my first Sean Kidd heart attack of the night, because I thought this was an amazing tag match without Conan in it. Like, it's amazing what 3LK can do if R-Truth is the one in the ring for him. I thought there was great back and forth. I thought R-Truth was very fluid in the ring. The, like, top rope leg drop, Dudley Boy move. One of Team Canada, I forget which one, was like hanging over the ropes at one point, and R-Truth does the axe kick to him. R-Truth was the standout show stealer of this match to me. And I ended up going, I actually would have rated it a little higher if it wasn't for the ending being the Team Canada finish that they all are. So I went 3.25 stars on this.
Gotcha. Ben, what did you think?
So first of all, a couple of very important fashion statements that were made early on this show. I don't know if you've already mentioned it, but Don West seems to be wearing a bin bag tonight. That's the first thing I noticed. And for those who are playing along at home, Marky Mark is wearing his traditional black t-shirt, and Soccer Mum's just gone for a white shirt. It's like very plain, very boring, but you know, the action in the ring, we're not even looking at them. This is probably this is the best 3LK match I have ever watched, and that is down to one man, Ron the Truth Killings. How much better is it when he's in there? I didn't go as high as Lewis, and I didn't go as high as Jake saying all that. I only went 2.25, but that is eons better than anything Conan can produce at this stage, because it, for me, just felt very like a very by-the-numbers sudden tag match. And the other three, like Jake says, BG in small doses is actually pretty decent. And the Team Canada boys can go. That some of the sequences with Rude and Truth in particular were lovely. But yeah, I went 2.25. Like I say, far and away the best 3LK match we've seen on this pod, which sounds damning with fake praise, but if you've been listening along, you'll know that's quite a big deal for us.
Yeah, I was just saying, Scott, consider yourself lucky. We gave you the one good 3LK match. So, but what do you think of the match, Scott?
I greatly appreciate you guys giving me the one good 3LK match. I actually surprisingly enjoyed it. I do think Truth is being wasted. He just seemed to have, I mean, he's charismatic now in 2021, but like, it's just like coming out of everything. Back in 2004. But I will say Rude looks like a main eventer right then and there. I know what he becomes, especially in TNA and in NXT, not really on the main roster, but he has a hell of a spine buster. He just snaps it off, and it's just great. I was wondering why BG James was the hot tag and not Truth, but it's probably because BG doesn't sell. I will say I did like Johnny Devine interfering, hitting with the hockey stick attached to the flag. It's such a great little thing. I went 2.5 stars on this. I was pleasantly shocked by how much I love it. I'm also a Team Canada mark, so there is that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm a huge Team Canada mark, so I always enjoy them. And yeah, I think BG did enough in this match, but Truth, like y'all said, is the big... He's the big winner in this match, and I thought he looked really good and really brought all of this together. And I'll go 2.5 like Jake and Scott did as well. Very solid and definitely the best 3LK match we've seen by far. I think the Conan factor makes it just that much better because, like Scott said, BG doesn't like to sell, and neither does Conan. So any match with those two is kind of a little sketchy, but after this match, we go back and we have Shane Douglas, and he's with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty says this is the most electrifying night in the history of TV and pay-per-view. Talks about the main event and how the fans voted to see the Cookie Gate video. Says a limo arrived from way up north, and if they want some, he'll give it to them. So he's making some veiled threats at Vince and Triple H that arrived earlier. But after this interview, we go into our next match. It's the six-man tag of Kid Cash, Kazarian, and Michael Shane, and they're taking on Sanjay Dutt, Sonny Siaki, and Hector Garza. Siaki's wearing Jake's favorite Airhead blue jacket. I always like to point that out whenever he wears that. So Jake's favorite outfit. But Dutt and Cash kind of start things, trading some shoves, slaps, and do some early mat wrestling. Dutt eventually gets the better of him with two awesome drop kicks. Dutt continues to get the better of Cash and then tags in Garza. Cash immediately gets a thumb to the eye and tags out to Michael Shane. Shane comes in and starts to kind of work over Garza. Garza then attempts to turn things around with what appeared to kind of be a monkey flip attempt, but he slips and basically lands on his head, and I don't know how he walked after that, let alone lived, but he landed straight on his head, so scary stuff right there. But Shane then kind of kicks him while he's down and tags in Kaz. They attempt to do a double team backdrop, but Garza actually gets the kicks up, and he kicks Kaz in the face and then throws Shane out of the ring. He then tags in Sonny Siaki, who comes in and hits a sweet float over neckbreaker. Kaz is then able to reverse an Irish whip, but Sanjay got a blind tag before he could do anything, and they end up in the corner with Kaz on the top rope, where Sanjay gets thrown. He kind of gets alley-ooped into Kaz, and he hits him with a Hurricane Rana off the top rope. Dutt then starts to go off the rope, but Tracy grabs his foot. Cash and Shane then kind of work over Dutt's previously injured shoulder. They kind of bring back the idea that Dutt had injured his shoulder a couple of months ago, so they start working that over. Dutt gets a quick splash in, but Shane and Cash continue to kind of go after Sanjay's arm. Kaz and Shane then hit their awesome backbreaker leg drop combo. I always love that move that they do. I made the note that this limb work going on in this match would have made Chad Campbell happy. So they were trying to get the Chad Campbell 2.5 stars with that one. Cash then gets tagged back in, and he hits a Fisherman Buster onto his knee, and then he does kind of a hammerlock slam into the turnbuckle. He goes for the cover, but it gets broken up at 2. The faces are really stupid in this one, as they keep kind of trying to come in illegally and get yelled at, only for the heels to kind of switch in and out and kind of continue to wear down Dutt. The heels just continue to keep wearing down Dutt's arm throughout the match. Dutt is eventually able to reverse an armbar by climbing to the top rope and hitting an arm drag. He then tags in Garza. He comes in and really gives it to the heels. Garza goes for the moonsault and hits it on Kaz, but the pin gets broken up at 2. Cash and Shane then end up getting dumped out, where Dutt eventually uses Siaki to kind of springboard off of and gets tossed way up in the air on top of them. Back in the ring, Tracy is up top and tries to hit something that I thought I heard that they called the pie in the sky, which is basically like a whoopee cushion kind of move, but for some reason they named it the pie in the sky, which is terribly offensive but hilarious at the same time. But she actually ends up hitting Kaz instead, and this allows Garza to kind of hit his corkscrew moonsault, and that gets them the victory. Scott, what'd you think of this six-man?
I enjoyed this six-man, because at first when I saw these guys, I was like, this match is gonna suck. But I got really into the match. I was blown away with how good it was. I mean, I do have some of my notes just making fun of them. Like I said, Sonny Siaki looked like great value Teddy Hart, which is pretty bad. I did like the alley-oop Hurricane Rana that you spoke about. That was very fun. And the limb work was great. Like, they beat the hell out of his arm. And I think that told a great story as well. It had your favorite ref, Mike Posey, in it, who mm-hmm. looks to me that he always tells people to check out his Dodge Neon. Sorry. That energy. Sorry. Sorry. Logan was right. I am a big fan, so that's why I'm nailing all this stuff. But I will say Hector has a dope finisher move because, like I said, I didn't watch TNA until it came on Spike TV, so this was, like, my first time seeing most of these guys. Like, I obviously had seen Kazarian and Tracy Brooks, but, like, Siaki and Sanjay Dutt. I really enjoyed this match. I went 3 stars on it. Like, I was just blown away. Like, when they got going, they got going.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what did you think?
So, if people remember, the last episode I was on, I shit all over the X Division, and in particular this section of it where I, you know, if you remember, it was, they were basically given like 30 seconds 2 minute matches, and every match just finished with a coconut to the head. This show however, they were given 11 minutes, and for once, hey, they got to tell a story, and the match was really good. What a concept. They might have something to you. Yeah. The limb work, never mind a Chad Campbell 2.5 stars, the limb work gets this a Ben Lock 2.75 stars. And that is almost as good.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's better, Ben, in all honesty. So,
but in all seriousness, like I say, you know, the fact that they were given the time, they told a great story throughout the match. Like you say, how did Garza not break his neck? I have no idea. But, you know, there was some fabulous moves, some great double teaming. You know, what's so offensive about the pie in the sky, Logan? I mean, you know.
It might be a little touchy. That might not make the Peacock cut if this was going on the network.
Yeah, yeah. You know, hey, we're a novel concept. Give five guys, you know, we'll ignore Siaki for a second. Give five guys 10 to 12 minutes to have a decent match, and guess what? They have a decent match. Crazy, I know. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that they got time showed that they could put a pretty good match together. But, Lewis, what'd you think of this six-man?
Yeah, no, it just continued the tempo from the last match. I enjoyed this one more than the previous one. All the limb work stuff, and they, like, heel behind Mike Posey's back tag stuff and working on Dutt's arm was fantastic. A couple of things they were doing, like, one of the times when Dutt was trying to go out, when I think it was Kaz that had his arm at the time, he was trying to go up and do the, like, run up the top rope and do a hurricanrana off it, and Kaz just kind of kicked his leg out from under him right back into the arm bar. Like, that stuff was fantastic. And then to end it with the twisting moonsault from the top rope, and this one was particularly brutal because all of Garza's weight just came right down on him. I thought this was a fantastic tag match. I gave this one 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I was going to say that corkscrew moonsault, he really landed flush on that one, so it was a pretty awesome move. But Jake, what did you think of this six-man?
Logan, I thought I would point out that, so I think Scott mentioned already Posey, but at one point Don says that you can see the confusion on Posey's face, which I feel like is, I was like, truer words never spoken, Don, because Posey.
That's a permanent thing.
Yeah, it's like, that's just his face, Don. but yeah, I enjoyed the match about as much as everybody else. I went 3 on it. It's a continuing trend on this show, though, to see guys that we've enjoyed on the pod kind of get a little bit of a focus. Like we said, Truth got a nice little showcase in the last match. We're big Sanjay fans for the most part on this pod, and he was kind of the star of this match to me. I know Garza kind of got to shine in the end, but the real majority of the meat of the match I thought was centered on him and kind of him getting worked over. And I thought he did a pretty good job at this. And it worked well, too, because you have Kaz and Shane working him over, and they kind of have the size on him. And they kind of work well because they are a tag team, so they know how to kind of go back and forth with each other. So I thought that was cool. It is interesting that Garza continues to be kind of, presented as strong. It's like he's honestly one of the most, I don't want to say, like, protected, but he wins a lot of matches for somebody that's not real. Like, normally when they have somebody that they're behind, like, you can tell, like Monty, you know, these guys, because they really push him a lot. But it's like Garza, we don't see him much outside the matches he wins, but he continues to win matches. So it's I don't know where they're going with him. But, you know, he won the gauntlet match, then he wins this. which we should mention that this is tied to the someone alluded to it earlier, but that the whole focus of this match kind of is the Jimmy Snuka's honor, I guess, about the coconut thing and everything. So real hot storyline with this one, but it was another fun match. We're off to a pretty good start in ring.
Yeah, I was gonna say the less said about the storyline leading into this match, the better. But yeah, nobody mentioned Kaz's sick 5 o'clock shadow he had going on in this match.
I sent a text to our group chat. Kaz with the 5 o'clock shadow and ponytail looks like a divorced dad that moved to Key West.
Four star.
My Sunday Dirt impression out. The first wrestler I ever saw live was Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Why the emphasis of full stops after everything, Sanjay? You're okay.
He's just having some of those Sean Kidd strokes. He can't help it. Yeah, I thought this was a really strong six man. Like Ben was saying, when you give these guys time, they can put something special together for sure. I'll probably go 3 stars like a few of you guys have. I thought it was really strong, and I like Garza a lot. I think his style is pretty good. He's definitely the best AAA guy that they have, that they keep bringing in. But I kind of wish that they would do a little bit more with him. I think the language barrier is one of those things that's kind of held him back from being like one of the main stars of the X Division. But he always, his moonsaults and his little corkscrew moonsault that he does for his finish is always really awesome. But yeah, these guys are all really good guys, and I think when you give them time and let them kind of go out there and do what they can do, they can put something really special together. But yeah, just two strong matches to start the pay-per-view, which is a lot more than we could say last month. So, after this, we go back and we're with Scott Hudson. He brings in Macho Man. Macho Man says the Kings of Wrestling aren't going to take over. TNA will reign supreme and come out on top. He then is with Petey Williams and Scott D'Amore. Petey says he and Saban trained together and grew in the business together. Says he continued training and he is not just a one-move wrestler, kind of implying that the Canadian Destroyer isn't all that he has in his repertoire. D'Amore then cuts in and says there's a reason he stuck with Petey and not Saban. It's because Petey is a winner, and he only backs winners. Strong words there from Scott D'Amore. But Jake, what do you think of these two promos back to back, Macho Man and then Team Canada?
Macho Man's Macho Man. Definitely not his greatest stuff he's ever done, but it kind of has Macho Man. I just can't get over his look. It's very jarring every time. No matter how many times I see it, it's just strange to see. It's going to be weirder when we get to see, I guess, like all of them, for lack of a better term, later in the show. But the Team Canada stuff, I thought it was okay. It's their normal stuff. They usually have pretty good promos. D'Amore kind of carries it, and they continue to let Petey talk more, which is, it's okay. But we've had a lot of hype for it. It was sort of just a standard promo to hype up a match that's going to be coming up soon.
Yeah, I gotcha. Lewis, what do you think?
Yeah, the Macho Man promo, I'm not the biggest fan of it. I'm trying to figure out, like, why are they doing Macho Man in the all black with the duster and the black cowboy hat and the black gloves? Like, his thing was always, like, he was the colorful, charismatic guy. So I'm not sure why they're, like, dulling him down and putting him in all black in TNA. Was there a thing, like, at the end of his WCW run that he was wearing all black?
Sort of with his 2000 run.
When he had his harem of girls, he was wearing all black.
Okay. Because, like, that was just a dulled down, like, I've never been a huge fan of Macho Man Randy Savage, but I definitely prefer the colorful, oh yeah, guy to this Macho Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made the comment. Go ahead.
I was going to say, everybody's having a stroke at that. I'm not a fan of Savage. Right now.
He's a youngin'. Leave him alone.
You kid.
Ben, what do you think of the promos?
I thought they were two all right promos. Like the boys have said, like, Savage at the moment, you can just give and take. He's there for a payday. I did like the Moore's line about Petey being a winner. That was very good and quite telling of what was to come later on. So yeah, that I like that Team Canada promo.
Gotcha. Scott, what did you think of the promos?
I mean, the Savage one, it's the guy, like Ben said, he's just here for a paycheck. I did like the Team Canada one. I will say I forgot that Petey Williams used to wet his hair down, and that made him look like the guy from Pete and Pete, which Jake may be the only one that remembers that.
I said Pete and Petey.
Yeah, Pete and Petey. Yeah. but Team Canada can do no wrong in my eyes. So like Scott Hudson basically is like saying, yeah, you're a loser, Saban. I agree with him. So there we go.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I thought it was. yeah, I thought it was pretty strong stuff from Petey. I thought it was cool that he kind of recognized that a lot of people think that he's kind of a one move kind of guy. So. I think it was strong to kind of make him realize that he needs to kind of break out the goods to eventually beat Saban in the match tonight. So, but from here, we'll go into our next match. It is the Serengeti Survival Match between Abyss and Monty Brown. Before the match, Monty grabs the mic, says the Serengeti is wherever he stands, invites the hungry, hungry hippo to come outside the ring with him and kind of bring it to him to the outside. And I'll reiterate, the Serengeti survival rules are you win by pin, submission, or you can slam your opponent onto thousands and thousands of tacks. what an absurd rule. it's even funnier when the finish comes around. But
just like in the jungle, right?
Oh, yeah. Tacks. Yeah, tacks everywhere.
Well, have you not heard the story of the mouse and lion and thorn?
I want to see this this great Serengeti somewhere or someday, but maybe I'll get Monty to take me there one day. but to start the match out, the two men kind of brawl around the ring. The hungry, hungry hippo actually does go out and kind of take it to Monty. Monty kind of uses the guardrails and the steps to his advantage. We get a "We want tables" chant literally seconds into the match, so so the crowd wants wood tonight. So but Abyss from there gets the advantage and starts kind of focusing on the ribs that had been damaged on the previous week's impact. He drives Monty into the apron and uses the guardrail to kind of wear down his ribs. Abyss eventually grabs a table and sets it up in the ring. Abyss is then taunting in the ring, and while this is happening, Monty actually sneaks in and starts kind of taking it back to the big man and starts hammering him with some big strikes. Abyss then gets the advantage back when he hits a big boot, and that gets him a two count. Abyss eventually grabs a chair and nails Monty in the back with it. He then sets it on Monty's chest and kind of hits the earthquake splash onto the chair on Monty's chest, but that still only gets two. Abyss then kind of continues to work over the back and chokes him with the ring rope. He then goes for another earthquake splash with the chair, but he actually gets crotched with the chair this time. Monty then grabs the chair and kind of bashes him in the head with it, and then he actually does a power slam onto it, so watching Monty pick up Abyss was pretty impressive. Monty then goes for the pounce, but gets caught into a black hole slam. I thought it was a great black hole slam, but that still only gets two. Abyss actually successfully wedges the chair in between the top and middle turnbuckle, so Sean would be proud of him for that. Monty then reverses a whip and actually throws Abyss into the chair that he had set up. He then actually hits the pounce, but it knocks Abyss out of the ring. He gets him back in the ring, but only gets two because he kind of had some time to recover. He continues striking him and sets him up in front of the table and goes for another pounce, but he ends up putting himself through the table. Abyss then gets two off of that, but then goes and grabs both of them actually go and grab each of their own bags of tacks that they had brought to the ring. Both men kind of battle at and around the pile of tacks, kind of teasing that somebody's about to go into it. And then Monty hits an Alabama slam, which I dubbed the Serengeti slam. And he slams him into the tacks for the win. The only bad part about this finish is he kind of undershot the tacks. So really only his head hit the tacks, which is actually still pretty brutal if you think about it. But I thought this was a really strong match. But Scott, what did you think of a Serengeti survival match?
I love this match. Like, I messaged you guys in the chat. It pisses me off that they never made Monty a champ because he could have been their superstar. That maybe shot them to the moon or maybe didn't do anything. But I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. I don't have that many notes down because I was so invested into this match. Just everything that you said was great. Like, God, they just beat the hell out of each other. I'm not even that big of an Abyss fan. Sorry, I just never understood him. But
blasphemy.
I know. I'm sorry. Sorry. This might be the only time on the pod now.
You're fired.
But God, they just beat the hell out of each other. And like you said, Logan, like the ending was a little off because they missed the tag spot. But God, like, Monty is just money. Like, it just infuriates me. But like, he was great. I loved him on the mic. Like, you know, he called Abyss obese and called him the hungry, hungry hippo, like you said. God, I just can't rave about this match. I tacked off a little for the ending, but I went 3.75 stars.
Gotcha. Ben, what did you think?
So we have been going, how many episodes have we been going, Logan? 20?
This is 22, I think.
So 22 episodes, and this is easily the most excited I have ever been for a match on this pod. You guys know I am an unashamed Monty Mark. I am an unashamed Abyss Mark. I was just hoping for a big hoss fight, and boy, did they deliver. This reminded me in the best ways of Vader versus the Boss, let's say, from WCW 94. That kind of just beat the shit out of each other. We're just going to keep throwing bombs and we don't care. You can keep your X Division in there, flippy, flippy shit. This is wrestling to me. And like Scott says, Monty is money. You know, why? we can moan about it all we want. I genuinely thought I was going to be the high vote on this. I went 3.5 on it. Love, love, love this. One of those matches where star ratings... 3.5 stars for the match, but 10 out of 10 for enjoyment for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, these two guys are both beasts, and I'm a huge fan of both, so
One more question, Logan. I don't know if you're a scientist and you can help me. The earthquake splash bits. So why did the second one hurt a bit, but the first one was okay? Is that... Does his arse and cock not hit the chair on the first one?
It's the angle of the chair that it's more of a math equation. It's more of the angles, kind of the geometry up in there. See,
the angle of the dangle is what leads to the mangle.
Coming out. Thank you.
Yeah, geometry. Pounce! Abyss in the nuts.
It's a Serengeti science.
Pounces. I'd have gone 8 on the pounceometer tonight. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back to college and be a teacher so I can teach Serengeti sciences in college. But Lewis, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic match. Again, like everyone was saying, they just beat the ever living piss out of each other the whole match. The like steel chair shots, the pounce, the black hole slam, when Monty, when Abyss ducks the pounce and Monty just goes head first into the table. This match was just fantastic. And the ending, even though Abyss missed the tacks, like Monty pulled him short, the back of your head hitting the tacks is still brutal as shit. Mm-hmm. And like, even like after the match, Abyss kind of tried to cover it by like crawling back onto the tacks and just pushing them into his back, which props to him for having to do that slowly just so he could sell that there were tacks in his back. God, this match was fantastic. I gave this one also 3.5 stars.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was gonna say, I forgot to mention that Abyss shows some chest meat off in this match, so that was pretty sexy. Yeah. But Jake, Jake, what are your thoughts?
Don, he pounced at his pants where he pulled out the tacks. He was losing shit. Like, he was like freaking out. 10,000 tacks. He was super excited about the tacks. But I'm a bit lower, but I still enjoyed it. I went 3 on it. It was a very good brawl, like a kind of hardcore brawl. I did like too that if Monty's gonna come out, I thought it was a good way to, you know, like Monty comes out and kind of dogs him and calls him obese and all this. So I kind of like that Abyss got the early advantage or kind of dominated him for the first portion of the match. because I don't think it will make Abyss look very good if he calls him obese and starts whipping his ass. Like, so it kind of worked that Monty got hammered a bit and established Abyss as like somebody that can hang with him, because he usually dominates most guys that he's in there with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought the Black Hole Slam was good. I like him pouncing the table, and I thought they did a good job like teasing the text. Whenever they did pull the text out, like who was going to go into him, you kind of knew it was going to be Abyss, because it's hard to imagine Monty taking it. But it was kind of like part of me almost like, it's like I didn't want him to lose, and I know it's like how you lose this match for some reason, this random stipulation, but I kind of wanted to see Monty go into the text, because I thought it would have just like I guess it, like my fantasy of booking on watch, like Monty goes into the text and almost like no sells it and gets up like a maniac. Like, I thought that would have been, like, such a Monty moment and, like, made him. But that's just me, like, you know, wanting to have a great Monty moment. But anyway, it was really good. I think if they do continue these, they're going to, like, you know, they've been doing these, like, the, I forget, what was the best one called? I can't remember all the names of these stipulation Monster matches. Because they're all kind of just, yes, the Monster's Ball, the Serengeti Survival. They're probably going to have to up the violence, because it's just the nature of these things. When you do them this close to each other, that you just kind of have to keep one-upping it. So that is the danger with these if they keep going with them. But it was fun. Another good match.
Yeah, I'm kind of assuming this leads to our first Full Metal Mayhem match, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Of course. Yeah, classic. The classic, the classic hierarchy. Go for the Monster's Ball. Old school booking 101.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll agree with Ben. I'll go and Lewis, and I'll go 3.5. Just an absolute just bomb fest in this one. They just completely obliterated each other with punches and kicks and black hole slams and pounces, and it was just it was an awesome match and an awesome fun way to spend a few about 15-20 minutes. And I really enjoyed it. But after we get done with this match, we go back to Vince McMahon and Triple H, and they're backstage, and Vince actually fires a production assistant, and the production assistant is like, you can't fire me. I don't work for you. They then find somebody else, and they have a tape, and Hunter takes the tape and smashes it on the ground, but it is revealed to be from Sean Kidd's personal collection, being that it is the best of D-Ray 3000. I know Sean watches that one all the time, so they actually smashed the best of D-Ray 3000 video, so another comical duo. Yeah, another comical segment with Vince and Hunter there. But after this, we go into our next match. It's the New York Connection versus the random team of Pat Kenny and Johnny B. Badd. We start the match with Swinger and Pat Kenny. It's kind of a throwback to their old team. They used to be tag team partners back when Pat Kenny was Simon Diamond. Kenny doesn't waste any time kind of taking it to Swinger. He doesn't have any of his shit, as they kind of trash talk each other to begin. But Kenny gets a few shots in. Swinger actually wants to shake hands after he gets his ass kicked for a minute, but Pat actually knows better and pokes him in the eyes. Pat then tags in Bad, and they do a double back elbow. Bad then hits a tilt-a-whirl Hurricane Rana. He then goes to pick up Swinger, but Swinger actually hits a jawbreaker. This allows him to tag in Gilberti, but Gilberti comes in and immediately gets arm dragged twice, Bad follows it up with a dropkick. Bad then continues to kind of wrench the arm and tags in Pat. Pat hits a Northern Light suplex, but only gets two. Pat then has Gilberti down, but he gets selfish and goes after Swinger, but gets overwhelmed and knocked to the outside, where Swinger actually rams his back into the post. Gilberti then gets him into the corner and kind of stomps away. At this point, Swinger and Gilberti just kind of constantly tag back and forth, and they kind of wear down Pat in the corner. Gilberti kind of makes a similar mistake as Pat did earlier in the match, where he gets kind of selfish and tries to take out Bad, only for him to come back to his corner and accidentally nail his partner. Unfortunately, Pat's back is so injured he isn't able to really take advantage. Pat is then able to get the better of a strike exchange and actually gets the tag to Bad. Bad then comes in and gives it to both our New York Connection guys. Bad starts to go for the TKO, but Swinger kicks him in the stomach. And then things kind of start to break down as all four men are in the ring. Eventually, Gilberti and Jackie, who is the special guest referee, I forgot to mention that, Jacqueline is the guest referee for this one. They kind of get up in a shoving match, and Gilberti actually ends up shoving her in the face. He then goes for a stunner on Johnny B. Badd, but he pushes him into a slam from Jacqueline, and then Badd hits the TKO, and that gets them the win. Jake, what do you think of this NYC match?
Yeah, this was real boring. We finally get our... here you go, Chef. Welcome to the podcast. this was like a... Yeah, like just slow. Like everything looked low impact. When they do the hot tag to Johnny B. Badd, he looks like he's in slow motion. The whole thing was just real tepid. The highlight for me was getting to see a horny Don West when he says that Jackie, he says that this is the greatest referee outfit he's ever seen. So it's fun to see a horny Don, which we don't get to see very often. But yeah, just a completely worthless match. 0.5 star. We've now kind of ended our streak of good matches on this show.
Yeah, leave it to NYC to ruin things. Yeah, and Bad is cooked at this point. He needed to stay retired. He didn't need to come in here. Ben, what'd you think?
I am so impressed, Logan, that you did nearly 2 minutes of talking about that match, because I have a note. I have a note that literally says, at a bullet point, I'm going to have to say it in the third person, but we'll let you know if something happens. That is literally the note I have wrote. Yeah, this is the ultimate cooldown match. In the words of our good friend Tim Capel, what are we doing? I gave it the gentleman's 0.5 star, and the good match streak ends at 3.
Well, we had to enjoy it while it lasted. I mean, we couldn't get selfish. No, we are talking about TNA after all. I'm just playing. But Lewis, what'd you think of the NYC tag?
I mean, every pay-per-view needs a piss break, right?
True.
That was what this match was. It was, I mean, first off, it had NYC, it had Disco Inferno, so of course I hate it because I hate Disco Inferno. But the
blasphemy.
Like, yeah, I was gonna give this match 1 star, but then Jacqueline hit a body slam on someone, so I gave it another 0.5 star. So I went with 1.5 stars, which will be the highest rated thing Disco Inferno for me does in TNA ever.
Yeah, I was gonna say, sadly, I think this is actually his last appearance, so you'll never have to see him again.
I hope so. Until recent TNA.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when we get there in 2045.
Yeah. You've got to love Lewis's rating system. 0.5 star because the referee gave a body slam.
Because specifically the referee's Jacqueline. That's why.
If it was Posey, like, caught.
No, yeah. If it was Posey, minus stars for a body slam. Come on.
He would have gone 0 if that had happened. But Scott, what do you think of this? What do you think of your first experience with the NYC?
I wanted it off my screen. But because I'm a completionist, I was like, I can't fast forward, so I just sat there and watched it. I hated it. God, I have this rule, like, if a movie is good, like, I won't look at my phone, and I have the same way with matches. With this match, I was on my phone the whole time. I was like, I was messaging you guys, was like talking about something else. I was doing anything I could except watch this match.
Damn, like, poor NYC.
And Johnny B. Badd, like, I remember him being good. I don't really remember much from his WWF run, but I remember him being good in like 94, 95 WCW. He comes out and think he's Lanny Poffo with a frisbee. So,
oh yeah, none of us talked about the frisbee.
I didn't mention the frisbee. I kind of wanted to block that out of my mind.
Sorry, I just have it written down here. Good. Like, I literally have a note here. It was similar to Ben's, saying I never want to see these four ever again.
I've never wanted the Bad Blaster to not go off more than I did during that entrance. I kind of wanted it to pull a Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 19, where it just and didn't come out. So,
and like TNA crowds are known for liking just about everyone. They couldn't give two shits about anyone in this match. Even Jacqueline, they didn't really care about. I mean, we had horny Don West. That was okay, but, like, no one cared. I gave... I gave this a dud, and I'm sorry you guys have to watch stuff like this on a regular basis.
I had to take note about the crowd. I'm glad somebody else got it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That crowd's almost like ECW Arena-like, isn't it, in terms of that everybody's over. But like Scott said, they just didn't give a single shit.
Yeah, none of these guys are over. I don't think, I mean, Pat was at the last pay-per-view. I don't think he's been on TV since. Yeah. Bad's only been on, like, once, I think. And then, you know, NYC's on fairly often, but they're always terrible. So, and they're heels, so they're not supposed to be liked. But, yeah, I'd probably go about a half a star on it just because nothing was, like, horribly botched or anything like that. But it was just slow and boring, and these are just, for, like, a, like, Ben just said, these are four guys that just aren't over and are just bad. And like I said, I think this is Disco's, or Gilberti, whatever you want to call him. I think this is his last appearance. So we'll actually finally be rid of at least half of the NYC. But after this, we go back and we're shown a shown the parking lot. And it appears that the Kings of Wrestling threw Randy Savage into a car, and that car speeds away. So, we're getting kidnapped angles here in the middle of the pay-per-view. Solid storytelling there. But we go straight from there, and we go into our next match. It is the match between DDP and Raven. Eric Watts graces us on the commentary table, so I know everybody was super excited for that one. He joins Tanae and Wes for this match. Paige jumps Raven before the bell, where he kind of wails on Raven with some hard strikes and a big clothesline. DDP locks up MVP because he absolutely wrecks ref Rudy Charles at the beginning of this match. He just kicks the shit out of him, and I absolutely loved it. but DDP then takes Raven outside and continues to kind of just obliterate him and throw him all around the arena. They make their way back into the ring, and Raven eventually gets the tide turned where he reverses the diamond cutter. Raven then brings his little Spartan helmet that he has out and nails DDP with it, so this apparently has no disqualifications. I wish they would have told us that beforehand, but I guess he kicked the ref, so we should assume that that's the case. And then he goes for the pin after he hits him with the helmet, but only gets two. He then chokes DDP in the corner and hits him with some brutal knees. He then sets up a chair for his little drop-toe-hold move and hits it, only to get two on the cover. Raven then gets a little too confident, and DDP springs up and hits some strikes and another huge clothesline. DDP then goes for another diamond cutter, but it gets reversed and he gets low blowed. Raven then whips him into the corner and nails a clothesline, only to follow it up and transition into straight into a bulldog. Raven then goes for an Irish whip, and DDP reverses it into a belly to belly. DDP then charges and basically, he gets kicked right into the throat. I thought that was a pretty brutal move. I'm surprised he got up as quickly as he did after that. But DDP then reverses a clothesline and actually hits the diamond cutter out of nowhere, kind of inspiring a young Randy Orton right there. Raven's druids then appear ringside. Raven is then able to catch DDP sleeping and hits the even flow DDT. But that still only gets two, so they're letting DDP kick out of Raven's finisher. It's an interesting way to book this. But Watts then gets up and tries to ward off the druids. He ends up choke slamming both of them. He then shakes DDP's hand and hits him with a huge lariat. So Eric Watts turns on DDP, and then he goes for the choke slam on DDP, but DDP actually hits him with the diamond cutter. Raven then attempts to catch him off guard and goes for the even flow once again, but DDP reverses out of it and hits the diamond cutter, and that's where he gets the win. Scott, what'd you think of this DDP-Raven match?
First off, I started off liking it, but then it went about 5 minutes too long. Like, and the Eric Watts stuff, I thought you guys were just piling on. Like, he's a punching bag. He is terrible. he was commentating like if I was commentating in real life the way he was talking. And who didn't see that swerve coming on DDP? So that takes away a little bit from the match. The match also went about 5 minutes too long, and I can't figure out who's the heel and the baby face, because like DDP comes to the crowd loves him, but then he kicks the ref. So that's a heel move, and like Raven, I don't think he's a bad guy in this. And then Watts is like here as well. So like, who was Raven a heel before this? Because when I was listening before, when he was feuding with Monty Brown and Abyss, I thought he was more of a tweener, but now they have him like as a heel. I don't know. I will always mark for the Diamond Cutter, which is now better known as the RKO. I just love that move, and it can be from out of nowhere. It's just great. I also have a note here. Kicking the ref is okay, but a foot on the ropes are not okay, because Raven got yelled at for that by the ref. So great. Like, I thought you guys would always be joking with like how bad the TNA refs are. No, y'all were saying that as true as it is. I went 2 stars. It went too long. Then the Eric Watts BS, which, you know, Watts attempts to attack DDP. DDP out, then outsmarts him, then outsmarts Raven. It's just 2 stars.
Yeah.
DDP is wasted.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I never lie about refs. Don't ever accuse me of that again. I'm just lying. Lewis, what'd you think?
I do think the match had it was better than it had any right to be, and I think the best thing about it was Raven, unlike some of the things he did like a couple months ago, he's not phoning this in. He's actually enjoying this match. You can tell, like, even though the whole storyline is him and DDP hate each other, you can tell they actually have a pretty good chemistry in the ring with each other. And there were a couple times where I was actually invested in it, like, oh, did Raven really kick out of that? Oh, did DDP actually kick out of that? So I don't know. I enjoyed this match more than I thought I was going to. And yeah, the Eric Watts stuff is stupid. I wish the Druids would actually like do something like that. Like when Eric Watts was in the ring, the Druids should have like grabbed DDP, and then Eric Watts should have hit a big boot on him or something. Why take out the Druids if you're then going to take out DDP? The Druids are on your side, Eric Watts, you idiot. So I don't know. Like I gave it 3 stars for the match, and then I just have to ignore the Eric Watts stuff afterwards because Eric Watts is useless.
Yeah, I was going to say, Scott, you asked who the heel was. Eric Watts is the real heel because he bores the shit out of everybody.
Raven is technically a heel, but he's also just a guy that wants to fight people. Like, he did heel stuff back with his Sabu rivalry, but it was because he wanted Sabu to fight him. So, yeah, he's a heel, but he's just a guy that wants other people to fight him.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's really what it comes down to, for sure. Ben, what'd you think?
Remember, Scott, Eric Watts means everything. Just real life. Question going back to the last episode of the pod, Logan. Have we yet figured out why they were having this match in the first place?
Well, we kind of deduced that it's a cuck angle and Eric Watts fucked Kimberly, but we're still not sure.
Okay. First point. Our first real big great value of the night was DDP's great value WCW theme music, but I didn't mind hearing this because obviously the knockoff of Smells Like Teen Spirit doesn't get played on the network, so this was actually quite nice to get that, and we got the DDP ring through the crowd like it's 1997 all over again thing. I'm with Scott. I liked it, but it was at least 5 minutes too long. But a real good brawl. It was far better than it had any right to be. I went 2.25 on it, like I say. And from a match where I was expecting maybe 1 star if they were lucky, I think that is quite a good result.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
All I was going to say was, pipe in and say was, like, I think the one thing this match proved is DDP could have a good run in TNA. I think that's what it helped prove.
Yeah, it was a real, and like I say, it was a good brawl, but I think the thing is, because you'd already had a good sort of brawl, you know, crowd-driven brawl, would this have worked on it might have been even better on a different show, just, you know, overshadowed by Monty and Abyss.
Yeah, I definitely think it was a bit too long, and they kicked out of a few too many finishers for my liking, but...
And also, something we haven't mentioned yet, is Don West practically crying like he's Dr. Phil. When Watts does the turn on Paige, it's like, Don, just be all right. They'll hug it out soon enough, mate. Just calm down.
Jake, what do you think of this match?
Yeah, I think it's like you weren't going to get anything terrible because these guys have pretty good chemistry. And I think as long as they're at least decently motivated, like even if physically they can't pull off everything or make everything look crisp and great, they still kind of know. It's like similar to what we said with Scott Hall in that AJ match. Like even though he was super physically limited, he still kind of just knows how a match should flow. And I think that applies to this one too, where both these guys kind of know how to work with each other. They were both selling really well. And even if everything wasn't perfect, it still flowed pretty well. But the yeah, for sure, the Eric Watts stuff. And then he's wearing his stupid-ass shirt. He looks like Great Value Steven Seagal. like Scott had said, I think him on commentary is like terrible because even if you go back and watch him in WCW, like cutting promos, he's like so, I don't know, like he's such a mush mouth. Like he just says a million words, but somehow says nothing. And he does that on commentary here where he just goes and he's like long, like tirades about stuff that really don't make any sense. Like at one point when DDP does kick the ref, he's like, Eric Watts is in the middle of talking. So Tanay has to wait like a good 15 seconds because Eric Watts finishes whatever like stupid thing he was saying. And like you could tell Tanay is like dying to say something about DDP just randomly fucking laying out the ref. But Eric Watts won't shut up. So he can't even do commentary well. And I have to mention the maybe the greatest Great Value we've ever done. And that is Don West calling the Diamond Cutter the Stone Cutter. And Tanay jumps in like you could tell Tanay was like, oh my god, he just called the Stone Cutter. Because like, I mean, the moment Don finishes saying it, Tanay screams as loud as he can Diamond Cutter because he's like trying to cover for him. But yeah, Eric Watts is such a loser. The Druids, I'm pretty sure you could see one of the Druids' jeans at one point under their under the little cape thing. Yeah, which is
one was wearing jeans, one was wearing khakis.
Typical Druid attire there. But Eric Watts is such a loser. It's like, is this even really... This is the same thing when, like, Nash turned on Jeff Hardy where it's like, oh, he turned on him. Like, but had they ever even really established much that Watts... Like, we knew Eric Watts was involved with this, but it wasn't like, oh, he's on DDP's side. It was very weird. But anyway, he's such a loser because even though he interferes, DDP still wins because he sucks so bad. I went at 2.25 because, like I said, they go through, you know, them going through their motions was pretty okay. But the Eric Watts stuff was really dumb and a stupid storyline.
Yeah, I think I just really like DDP a lot. So I went 2.5 on it. I do think it went a bit too long. I do think the Eric Watts stuff is stupid because they really still haven't explained what he did wrong or did to DDP to, you know, make piss him off or whatever this storyline is all about. I still don't understand. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid contest and it was way better than I thought it had any chance of being. So I do think that they did a pretty good job, but they were given just a little bit too much time, and I think they kicked out of a few too many finishers for my liking. But I do think it was a fairly solid match at the same time, so I gave it 2.5. From here, I think we'll take a break, and we'll come back with our last three matches, our X Division title match, our Big Six-Man Tag, and then our Six Sides of Steel. But we will see you on the other side.
DDP, too cool.
Place to be Nation, welcome back to the second half of our show where we're talking about Turning Point 2004. We come back from our break and we get a locker room camera on Triple H and Vince in their special locker room. Tracy then brings her cookies and milk to Vince. Vince eventually knocks him to the floor and tells Tracy to go get him Dusty. Triple H then jumps on the floor and starts cramming cookies into his mouth. So I don't really know what that was all about, but it was funny to see Hunter, quote unquote Hunter, jump on the floor and start eating all the cookies. But from here, we'll go to our X Division title match between Petey Williams and Chris Sabin. They give us the X Factors to start this match out, which are the bullet points for these X Division title matches. The first one is X Champ challenges for the championship. They kind of talk about Sabin, how he's been a two-time champ before, and he's actually never lost the title by pinfall. He's lost in an Ultimate X match, and then he had to forfeit because of an injury at one point. The second bullet point is Now We Go to School. Talks about how Petey and Sabin kind of trained in the same school before they got into the business. And then the last one is, can Sabin's counter destroy the Canadian? So that was a really funny way to... I thought that was a pretty solid there bullet point there. But to start the match, the two kind of lock up and do the usual X Division where they kind of just do reversal after reversal, trade some arm bars, kind of do some flippy stuff. But Sabin almost catches Petey with the cradle shock just minutes into the match, but Petey actually escapes. Petey gets back into the ring, and the two grapple and trade holds until Sabin kicks Petey in the head. Sabin then gets some big forearms in and hits a pretty awesome missile dropkick. Petey goes to the outside to kind of collect himself as he's kind of been flustered by how fast Sabin's coming out of the gate. Sabin then goes for the cradle shock again, but Petey blocks it once again and throws Sabin to the outside. He then dives to the outside and hits a Hurricane Rana on him on the floor. Sabin gets the advantage back by getting another surprise kick in and then brutally powerbombs him from the apron into the railing. I thought that was a really nasty thud that happened on that one. They then go and fight through the crowd where Sabin kind of jumps off one of the risers onto Petey. Sabin then tries to do a reverse suplex to the outside of the ring, which would have been deadly. But Petey actually reverses it and brings Sabin's throat across the rope. While Petey has Posey distracted, Damore actually gets some boots in on Sabin. Sabin then gets rolled back into the ring. Petey covers him, but only gets two. Petey then lands some heavy strikes and does my little new favorite move where he stands in the Tree of Woe and does the O Canada salute. And then Posey gets distracted again, and Damore kind of takes advantage and pulls Sabin's neck under the rope. Petey then hits a pretty sweet neck breaker tornado DDT combo. Petey then hits a drop kick to the back and locks in a necktie submission. Sabin then tries to break out but gets nailed immediately with a drop kick. Petey continues wearing Sabin down, hits a snap suplex, and then immediately transitions into a back suplex. He does kind of the Three Amigos transition that Eddie used to do on that move. But then Petey continues to go for covers, but Sabin continues to kick out. Petey chokes Sabin on the rope, and while Posey is getting him off, Damore actually nails Sabin once again. The two guys then start to kind of trade chops before Petey nails a jawbreaker. Petey then goes up to the top, but Sabin is able to hop up to the top and nail him with his awesome top rope belly to belly. When both men get back up, the two start kind of teeing off with punches on one another. Sabin then hits an enziguri and nails a pretty awesome running sit-out powerbomb, but somehow that only gets two. I thought that might be the finish, honestly. Sabin goes up to the top, but gets crotched. Petey then goes for a spear, but Sabin skins the cat and avoids it. And then he goes for a somersault dive to the outside. The two get back into the ring, and Petey is able to reverse an Irish whip and into his little tilt-a-whirl Russian leg sweep that he does. Petey then goes for the Canadian Destroyer, but Sabin, being the counter magician that he is, of course reverses it. But Petey also reverses the cradle shock and actually locks in one of the worst sharpshooters I've ever seen. But after this, Petey doesn't have much energy left, so Sabin is able to crawl to the ropes and break out of the sharpshooter. Sabin is then up on the top and grabs Petey from the apron. Petey then tries to hit a sunset powerbomb, but Sabin actually holds onto the ropes. Sabin then hits an alley-oop and immediately transitions into a pile driver, but that only gets two. Petey then goes for the Canadian Destroyer, and it gets reversed. Sabin then goes for the cradle shock, but Damore pulls Petey off. Petey then gets some brass knuckles out of his tights, and while Damore has the ref distracted, Petey nails him with the the Nux and actually steals the win right there. That was a lot of talking, so I'll go to Scott. What did you think of this X Division title match?
I loved it. Like, these guys just went balls to the wall. I don't even know how long it went, but I think it was like 15 minutes. They busted their ass for 15 minutes. I really enjoyed, like, the power bomb to the guardrail. That looked nasty. Like, it was rough, but, like, it got the job done. Like, not only can these guys, like, do the flips and everything, but, like, they can bring it when it's needs to be brought in. The reverse, like, I guess this was, like, a reverse Canadian Destroyer into, like, a pile driver that Saban did. Mm-hmm. That was an awesome move. Like, it just looked, everything was just so crisp, and these guys were fighting over a title. I actually thought we were going to see a title change, to be honest. Sadly, that was not the case. I guess this is normal with you guys, with Scott D'Amore getting in the ring and, you know, causing the issue. But I did like that they like to call Scott D'Amore a big load. They called him that like four or five times.
Yeah.
And
they act like he's like morbidly obese. Yeah,
like, yeah, he's such a like big 600 load.
Pounds. Like,
so yeah. Go ahead.
So that was just funny. Like, you know, like even Tanae's calling him a big load, but it's like, okay, Tanae. But I did have this match at 4 stars, but, you know, 2 Team Canada matches and 2. Like DQ, like not DQ endings, but like, you know, 2 of the basic same ending pretty much. And the Brass Nux looked like cardboard. I don't really know what Brass Nux are supposed to look like, but it looks like the extra like piece of cardboard that you have when you get like a blender or something. So I went 3.5 stars on this. It was a good match, but like you only remember the ending, and that's what I remember is like the shitty ending.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I was gonna say, I think it's more ironic that fucking Don West calls him a big load, as they are probably the exact same weight. So I always think that's super ironic. But Lewis, what'd you think of this X Division title match?
I think it's fantastic. Probably the best one-on-one X Division match we've seen so far, in my opinion. Everything was smooth. The only like thing I was miffed about was the poorly locked in sharpshooter, which is like, I remember like back when we did the do not try this at home trampoline wrestling, like the sharpshooter was not hard to lock in as a kid. So I don't understand why no grown adult in WWE, TNA, whatever, can lock in a sharpshooter properly. Nobody can do it. So the sharpshooter kind of took a little bit away from it, but the match itself was so fantastic. And I actually didn't mind the ending because it wasn't a hockey stick this time. Like, it was a brass knuck punch. I can honestly think that would knock someone out. So even though the brass knucks looked not like a William Regal set of brass knucks, but I thought it was a more unique finish. They haven't done that yet. So I went 4 stars with it. I thought it was a fantastic match, and I want to see these two wrestle another 3 or 4 matches in this rivalry.
Yeah, we complained last month about them not getting enough time at Victory Road, him and AJ. So I think this is the exact blueprint of what they can do if they're given enough time. I think if AJ and Petey had gotten enough time, I think they could have had just as great of a match, and I thought it was really strong as well. But Ben, what do you think?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. You know, there wasn't really a lot of flippy stuff in there. They had plenty of big spots. So, you know, you've mentioned the powerbomb on the rail. They had the dive from Saban that Saban did onto PT through the crowd. But they told the story. And yes, I have took the piss out of Chris Saban for being counter move magician. But I loved the fact that, like, Saban never hit the cradle shock. Petey Williams never hit the Canadian Destroyer. It was decided because one guy had to cheat to win. And we do shit on that Team Canada ending a lot on this show. And I think the last time I was on, I think Jake said something like, if they did, you know, if they spread it out a bit, it would have more impact. And I totally agree with that point. I'm probably gonna shock you, but I'm gonna dust out the old 4-star paddle for this.
Gotcha.
Hell yeah.
I'm gonna join Lewis at 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that's overrating it at all, for sure.
Best non-AJ X Division match I have seen since we've done this pod.
Yeah, by absolutely.
By far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without doubt. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm gonna help Sean not have a heart attack because I'm a bit lower, but I still enjoyed it. My issues are like what has already been said. So I'll start with what I really like the beginning, the smooth back and forth, like with the kicks and the counters, really awesome. I thought Sabin looked really awesome through this entire match. I thought he got to show a lot of personality even through the way he worked the match, which a lot of times I think he's been a highlight because he's super talented, athletic. But I feel like more of his personality was able to come out in this because so much of what they put him in is normally just kind of throwaway X Division stuff on TV that it's nice to see him be able to actually work a full real match. I like how they were like that buckle bomb kind of thing. That's what I called it, that they hit on the rail was really sick, really huge impact on that. I like how they were upping the intensity as they kind of like they did their feeling out and they kind of were working into the the bigger spots. And at one point, I forget who it was either Don or Tanae says, this is what TNA is about. And I was just thinking, yeah, no, I really wish it was more what it was about, because this is, and I feel like it's a big story throughout the show, is that they really show throughout the show what their strengths are. This match was it, was one of them, and we'll see more of it later. But I was just like, no, I really wish I would focus more on this, because this is what you do best. But anyway, just really awesome, like, pin attempts by Sabin, the way they move. I did think there was a stretch where Petey kind of slowed it down a bit too much and it got a little bit, like, kind of killed the pace a bit. But Sabin has that power bomb. That was awesome. That sequence into the Russian leg sweep. It's just them constantly going into cool kind of counter sequences and stuff that were awesome. Tanae is losing his shit. He was, and now at this point, Tanae is pouncing in his pants because he was like, this was like right up his alley. But the sharpshooter was bad. It's so weird. Like Lewis was saying that so few guys can pull, especially like these guys, like, you know, like a Petey, who you would think is a pretty technically gifted wrestler. But for whatever reason, nobody ever cranks on the back, you know, like everybody always does the legs and just for some reason can't do the back thing. And I don't know if that's on the guy that's putting it on or the guy who's taking it, but it's just for some reason they never get. That's the part that nobody ever does. But yeah, it was pretty terrible. But it's kind of like Ben was saying, though, with the finish, it's sort of a boy who cried wolf thing where they do it so much that it loses impact. And especially in a match like this that was so good up until the finish, and then you just come in and it's sort of lazy. I kind of said, like Scott said, cardboard. To me, it looked like he pulled like a grill, like a Lil Jon grill out of his crotch and just hit him with it. But it was just kind of I guess my thing is it just didn't feel like the finish fit the match. I know you kind of want to protect both guys, but I feel like there might have been a more creative way to do it, because it just felt like a lazy, like, you know, these guys go ball to the wall for like 15 minutes and then lazy kind of typical Damore distracts the ref and that kind of finish. So that took away from it for me. So it was a little deflating considering how good the match was up. But I went 3.5. I maybe not as high as some, but it was a damn good match that could have been better if a few things were improved.
Yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from for sure. I'll go 4 with Lewis and Ben, but because I just thought it was really strong. And it's definitely, I think, the best X Division match we've seen so far. I do agree with Ben. I kind of like that neither of them hit their finisher to win the match. I maybe would have not gone with the brass knuckles, but I just maybe a sneak pin or something like that would have been a little bit stronger of a finish. But yeah, definitely a real strong match and definitely the best X Division match we've seen so far for sure. I agree with all I got. Go ahead.
One more thing. I've called it the O Canada Stomp. You can have that for free if you want, mate.
Okay, yeah, I'll go with that one for sure. Yeah, that's one of my favorite moves. It's such like the biggest cocky piece of shit move to do. Just step on your opponent's balls and sing your national anthem. I love it. But after this match, we go to the back, and we're back in Vince's locker room, and a little person shows up at his door. Who seems to be an agent of Dusty's, and eventually kicks him in the balls and kind of beats him while he's down. Just another ridiculous segment with fake Vince. here, but and he calls his son. He's like, Triple H in the room with him, so he's like, "Where's my son-in-law? Come beat this little person's ass." So I thought that was really funny. We transition straight from there, and we get our next match, our big six-man tag between the Kings of Wrestling and AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, and Randy Savage. Due to Randy Savage being kidnapped earlier, this is pretty much a handicap match. The Kings of Wrestling come down to this horrible Elvis ripoff music, and Nash and Hall are dressed in kind of Elvis jumpsuits. So they're kind of playing the part tonight. I also made the note that Hardy is absolutely coated in his glow stick jizz tonight. He has it all over his torso. So it's kind of nasty looking. After they took out Savage earlier, they kind of made it a handicap match. Jared and Styles kind of start things out. Jared, of course, taunts and Styles to start. So AJ kind of does the same thing back. He kind of taunts to get under Jared's skin. They eventually lock up and trade some head and arm locks. AJ eventually gets the advantage with one of his phenomenal drop kicks. Jarrett then tags in Hall because he's kind of flustered. He immediately gets AJ into an armbar and kind of paintbrushes his head to embarrass him. AJ is then able to use kind of his elusiveness to fluster Hall and get a few shots in. Hall then kind of runs to the corner like a scaredy cat and tags in Nash. Nash comes in with some big knees, elbows, and strikes. Styles then actually breaks out of a power slam attempt and again hits one of his drop kicks. He then delivers one to Jarrett and Hall as well on the apron before tagging in Hardy. Hardy is then in with some forearms of his own. He gives one to everybody all around the ring. He does his little leg drop to the balls move that he always does and does his little thing where he runs up the top rope and hits the little drop kick in the corner. Hardy then starts to run into the ropes, but Hall kind of strikes him from behind. He then goes to deck Hall and Hall and Jarrett, but Nash actually gets up the big boot when he turns around. Nash then tags in Jarrett, who comes in and stomps all over Hardy. Jarrett then kind of taunts a little bit more and tags in Hall. Hall then hits some big strikes and hits his kind of patented choke slam, but that only gets two. Hall then tags in Nash, who delivers his little signature side slam. And then goes for the cover, but AJ breaks it up. Hall is back in and locks in his abdominal stretch, and he uses Nash's hand for leverage. He kind of pulls on it. Hall then appears to be locking in an STF, but he actually ends up just kind of slapping Hardy in the head and kind of paintbrushes him in the head to kind of embarrass him a little bit. Hall then has Hardy's leg and is taunting him, but Hardy is able to actually hit his little inside-out kick to break away. Hardy then gets the tag to Styles while Hall tags in Jarrett. Styles comes in a house of fire, really taking it to Jarrett, and even goes after the other two and takes them out on the apron. Styles then hits his moonsault into the inverted DDT move, which is always awesome. Jarrett isn't really the best at taking it, so they kind of botch it a little bit, but Styles is so smooth that he actually makes it look pretty good still. He then goes for the Styles Clash, but Jarrett kind of picks him up and sets him on the apron, where he starts to go for the phenomenal forearm, but Nash actually kind of trips him up on the top rope, and he kind of busts his ass. Jarrett then gets a few shots in and tags Hall, and Hall immediately hits the fallaway slam on AJ. Nash is then tagged back in. He gets Styles in the corner and gives him his big knees and big elbows and a few forearms. He then goes for a couple of quick covers, but only get two. Jarrett is then tagged back in, where he hits a gut buster and then goes for the figure four, but Styles actually reverses it into a roll up, where he only still gets two, and then goes for a schoolboy roll up and gets two once again. Jarrett then kind of panics and tags Hall back in smartly, and he smartly holds AJ's leg so he can't get the tag to Hardy. Hall then gets Styles into their corner, and he and Nash kind of wear down Styles with some stomps and punches. Nash is then tagged back in, and he locks in a bear hug. Styles breaks out and actually gets the tag in, but stupid Andrew Thomas doesn't see it, so stupid TNA refs once again. Nash then drives Styles back into the corner and drops him on the top rope. He then tags in Jarrett, who gets into a strike exchange with Styles, and that Styles actually comes out on top of. They then do a double crossbody in the middle. Styles gets up first and actually gets to tag to Hardy, who comes in and hits the Whisper in the Wind on Jarrett. He hits an STO on Hall and brings Nash's throat across the top rope. After he gets his shot in on Nash, Jarrett is back up and attacking him from behind. Jarrett goes for the stroke, but eventually gets reversed into the Twist of Fate. Hall then starts to come in, but Styles cross-bodies him as both Styles and Hardy go for covers, but Nash actually pulls the ref out of the ring and gives him a big punch. Styles then gets kicked through the ropes in on Nash. Hardy is then going for the Swanton on Jarrett, but Hall actually hits him in the back with the guitar, and Hardy actually still somehow manages to kind of do a front flip on top of Jarrett. Styles then does a slingshot crossbody to Hall on the outside, and everyone is down at this point, and suddenly Savage emerges from the back, so he escaped his kidnapper, and he immediately tags in, takes it to all the Kings of Wrestling. All the faces eventually lock in, kind of dueling headlocks. They all have a headlock in on each of the Kings of Wrestling, and Jarrett attempts to do a sunset flip roll-up when he breaks out, but Savage actually does the little Owen Hart move where he sits down and grabs the leg and actually gets the cover, so the team of Styles, Savage, and Hardy actually win this match. So, Jake, what do you think of this six-man?
Since you just mentioned it, I'll go ahead and say it now that he did not execute it quite as well as Owen Hart does, though.
Definitely not off the bat.
It was not quite as smooth as an Owen Hart one. It was kind of like like fucking fell on his ass. So yeah, the finish was not the greatest, but anyway, the match itself I thought was pretty solid. I've been pretty skeptical of the Kings of Wrestling overall because I kind of was worried about how, you know, were they going to bring this in for the right reasons or, you know, try and help elevate guys. And I think even though the finish is goofy and Savage comes in and he's got, like what I was saying earlier, when you finally get to see him, like, he's always been, like, bald, but for some reason it just looked, like, bad here. Like, he had the, like, scraggly, greasy hairs on the back. Mm-hmm. Like, it was not a very flattering bald on top look he had going on. The triple sleepers I thought was a little goofy, but the whole match itself was really, AJ was the star of this. He looked like a stud, and to the credit of the heel team, the Kings of Wrestling, I thought they made him look pretty good throughout the match. Like, and he definitely outshined Jeff Hardy throughout the entire thing, in that he was kind of doing exactly what Jeff does, just like 1,000 times better. Like, his comebacks were smoother and more effective. When he's selling, it looks better. So everything Jeff normally does, he was doing. He was just such a workhorse in this, in that he, you know, he is hitting, like, he hits that sick drop kick, and he always has good drop kicks, but this one in particular, like, he really landed flush. I think he hit, I think it was Jarrett that he hit it on, and he really cracked him right in the face, and it looked great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but AJ was just, that's the whole story of this match for me, and really, I gave it 2.5, and it really is all credit to him. The ending stuff got real goofy, and it was kind of long, but I actually thought the Kings looked okay for what it was, and they made AJ look like a stud. And yeah, so if nothing else, I feel like it accomplished that of making AJ look good, which he always does, but it's cool to see him in something that's like a main event kind of angle and looking this good. So yeah, that was my positive for this one. So but I guess my main point too is that, like, I was kind of going this thinking, man, this could end up being really, really bad, and it wasn't. It was fine.
Yeah, I gotcha. Ben, what'd you think?
I think this is the third match tonight where we're all going to be saying pretty much the same thing. Like, this could have been a hell of a lot worse than it actually ended up being. Don't get me wrong, it's still the second worst match of the show, but considering I thought it was going to be like a dud, half a star, you know, I've actually gone 1.75. So that kind of tells you where it goes. And like Jake says, AJ is just the fucking man. He's the best singles competitor they've got. And it's not even close. Not just that one drop kick he hit on Jarrett, but yet the other two on Hall, yet Hall and Nash were there as well. And that was amazing. I loved the I loved when he went for the forearm and Nash dragged him down. That bit was great. And just, yeah, he just outshone everybody in this match. And we'll talk about the whole Savage thing afterwards, I'm sure. But he can just go do one. But yeah, so I went 1 3/4. And, you know, like I say, and I know I've said it twice already tonight about other matches, but could have been a hell of a lot worse than what it was.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Lewis, what did you think of the six-man?
Yeah, it was just okay. It wasn't amazing, but it wasn't going to be amazing with people in the match. AJ and Jeff definitely helped carry it, especially AJ. So I think I agree. I'd give it a 1.5, maybe closer to a 2 stars. The finish was dumb, though. Like, Macho Man with the little punch and drop down while the other two are holding them in sleeper holds. That could have been a lot better. Like, I'm not expecting Randy Savage to do an elbow drop off the top rope in his current condition and current state as an old man, but do something better than that. So it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, that's true for sure. Scott, what'd you think?
Guys, that's the leader of the TNA locker room, Randy Savage. That's a direct quote. Respect
his name.
Exactly. Put some respect, because that's a direct quote from TNA. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, TNA or.
Yep, definitely said it.
Yeah, he said he was I was flabbergasted what, but I went 2 stars. The 2 stars is just because AJ Styles, like, he may, this is probably going to get me some shit, but he may be the perfect wrestler. He could work with anyone. What were you say, Logan?
I say, you're not going to get any shit from anybody on this one. That's not a bad statement for sure.
Yeah. He had to be the one to carry it, because Jeff was going to carry it, but there's only so much he could carry it. Jeff Hardy looked like someone splooged on his chest, so he's not.
Get it right, Scott. Dayglo jizz.
Yes, sorry.
Be modest.
Somebody pounced all over him.
Well, speaking of that, pounce, perfect segue. I had here, why not have Monty come in and be the third man? This is like WCW 96 when Luger got knocked out. Why not have someone else come in there and be, you know, quote unquote, the third man? But yeah, like, you know, Nash had his working boots on. Jeff Jarrett is Jeff Jarrett. It's his home company. He wants to, you know, do the best he can. Macho comes in, puts on a shitty-looking sleeper, which that triple sleeper spot was stupid, because I know I just said AJ Styles is the perfect wrestler, but he had to try to put on the sleeper hold on Nash when there's like a foot and a half difference. So he was struggling, but yeah, it was... Why even bring Macho in? But, you know.
Yeah, I got you.
I hate saying that.
Yeah, I felt bad for AJ at the end, because I kind of threw him with Nash, and he had to try to sell a sleeper hold on him at that point. But yeah, I'll go 2 stars, and like a couple of y'all have said, completely on the back of AJ Styles. He completely busted his ass in this one and went super hard, and he's just completely carrying this whole storyline with these guys, because, I mean, Nash is bringing his in, and Hall's been pretty good in the ring, which is a surprising thing to say. Yeah, Styles is definitely the MVP of this match and totally killed it for sure. But after this match, we go to the back, and our fake Vince is getting loaded into a ambulance. He's completely bitching out Triple H. Triple H said he went looking for a tape, but he found a gym instead, so he got a workout in. We go back into the arena, and Don West and TNA are kind of talking about the match that just happened, and Don West is campaigning his ass off for 51-year-old Randy Savage to get a world title shot at this point. So just an absolutely absurd thought. So Don West is completely behind the Savage title reign coming up. But then we get our first of what I will assume will be many final resolution packages. It's just this absurd, you know, a video of some people in the TNA tunnel kind of saying what their New Year's resolution is. But it's just absolutely ridiculous. But I'm sure we'll see that about 5,000 times between now and that point. So We then go back to Dusty, and he is at the production truck, and he tells them to roll the tape. So we will finally see the Cookie Gate tape. We go in on a shot of Shane Douglas, Tracy Brooks, and Abyss walking around with some cookies and balloons. They're walking around the Universal Studios lot. We see that they meet up with BG James and R-Truth, and they kind of meet up with them. They then go to a catering area somewhere, and they ask if they could have a salad and some mahi-mahi. They continuously ask for Vince, but get absolutely nowhere. But it basically all ends with Truth stealing some mahi-mahi and them saying that they, if they could ever meet with Vince, they would love to talk to him. But it's just an absolutely absurd, ridiculous, stupid segment. But Scott, what'd you think of this? What'd you think of this Cookie Gate?
You guys have the Great Value Award. This is like even worse. I'm pretty sure when I was talking about my disdain for it, like Jake said, it was government cheese. it makes them look so bush league. Like, oh look what we did. Like, oh, we stood up because they came on the Universal lot, and that's our lot. It's amazing any of them still got jobs after this. That shows that Vince never gave a shit about TNA.
Mm-hmm.
But and it's obviously Ray that was there, and mm-hmm. they weren't going to fire Ray because he's best friends with Conan. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
it kind of looked like Nunzio. Honestly, I kind of thought that was him too.
They're the same height,
basically the same size. But Ben, what'd you think of this ridiculous segment?
So a couple of things. Just cycle back a bit. They might as well have put a big neon sign up behind Don and Mike saying Savage versus Jarrett, final resolution, order now. Just that bit was just ridiculous. As for Cookie Gate, right, so I might get... if there was a shit take award, I'm sure I might get this a little for this tonight. The actual idea of it, I haven't got a problem with that because, let's face it, WWF did it with WCW, so the idea... I'm actually okay with. It's the execution and the overblown, like, you know, like treating it like it is going to be this great, amazing segment. And in the end, it's just BG James saying hi to Eddie Guerrero and Conan coming in, Conan, Ray coming in to say hello to Conan and some cookies. And that's the whole thing. So let's not build it up and hype it up like it's this great, amazing thing. And then, it's basically, you know, one of my other great phrases, it's basically a popcorn fart.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is not at all what I was expecting this to be, so it definitely ended up being a popcorn fart for sure. Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, definitely a waste of time, definitely a waste of energy. Like, not only could they have gotten in trouble possibly legally with WWE, but Universal Studios definitely didn't greenlight this little sideshow. It could have gotten them in trouble with the person that hosts their weekly show. Like, I guarantee you WWE is giving them more money than TNA has made them so far. So, I would not risk the person hosting me by doing this little side stunt that could have gotten them in legal trouble.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, it was brutally lame. Like, all I can remember is him saying mahi mahi like 1,000 times. He said, not shut the fuck up about the mahi mahi. Like, it's all he kept saying. And I was like, why does he keep saying this? But it was just them trying to be. It was like great value, like the DX tank thing, which I think even that, like, looking back, comes off as a little lame, but at least felt like a big deal because the two sides were on the same level. And this just feels like, like Scott said, it's not going to help them at all. They just need to not, you know, they need to not worry about doing stupid skits. Yeah.
That was DX. This was Abyss with balloons and Tracy with cookies. Like, definitely two different things.
And mahi mahi is munchies, isn't it?
He wants some mahi mahi with a side of the net new age poo poo. So
that way you can do some dangerous stuff to you.
I'm so glad we've gotten Jake to the point where he just absolutely hates anything BJJ says.
So bad.
It's my proudest such moment.
This is all about Pod 4 is just to break the nice guys a place to be. That's my whole mission.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've broken me already, so we just got to start wearing down Jake a little bit, I guess. But we'll go from here into our main event of the night. It is going to be our Six Sides of Steel match between America's Most Wanted and Triple X. I thought we got a really awesome video package before the match, hyping it up, kind of showing the entire history between the teams, how they had the last man standing match at the last pay-per-view and the previous Six Sides of Steel match, or Steel Cage match. It wasn't Six Sides of Steel at that point, but previous cage match that they had where AMW kind of finishes it off with a death sentence from the top of the cage. But I thought that was a really strong video package. Before I move on, Jake, what did you think of the video package to start the match?
I thought it was really awesome. Just showing like all the previous, especially somebody who didn't see all that stuff, to see like their previous kind of thing. It was kind of a weird moment where at first I was like, it kind of looked like the match we're about to watch. And I was like, okay, wait, there's no six sides. This is just a regular ass ring. And so I was like, it was just cool to see like the history that they've had this kind of match before. And the other thing is that they played Great Value Aerials by a System of a Down in the video package, like identical. It sounded just like the song. It's clearly what they were ripping off, which was funny, which I guess was pretty hot in like 2004, like when I was in high school. So good for them.
But before I forget it, I forgot to mention this, and Matt's going to kill me, but in the opening package to the show, they played the like WrestleMania 19 lead-in music. I forgot to mention that when we started, but I'll mention it now so Matt doesn't kill me. But Lewis, what did you think of the video package before this match?
I think it was a nice reminder like how long these two teams have been doing what they're doing, how good they both are at this, and that they've had a match like this before, but tonight's going to be so much more brutal because they hate each other even more now. I definitely think it set the stage to let us know that this is going to be a great main event. Like, there's a reason this is coming on after the World Champions match. It's going to be good.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Ben, what did you think of the video package?
I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Really added to, like, the gravitas and the feel to the match and, like Lewis said, totally deserving of the main event spot they were given.
Mm-hmm. Scott, what do you think?
I personally, like, just echoing the sentiment said by the other guys, I love, as someone who hadn't seen this before and known that they've been, like, feuding on and off for 14 months, that's a nice little callback. It's something that I think is missing in today's wrestling, personally. It's, like, the callback to, like, hey, this has been going on for a while. I also loved that it is the main event because, like Lewis and Ben just said, it, like, adds some, like, a gravitas to it. It's, like, these two teams are going in. One team is going to come back, like, it should be the main event, and spoiler alert, they deliver. I will get to it, but yeah,
I gotcha. Yeah, it's good that this ended the show because it's like the final resting place of one of these teams. So like one of these teams is gone after this. So it was a good way to end the show for sure.
Logan, just before you start, mate, just take a drink of water because I think you're gonna need it.
Yeah, I lubed up before we got to the second half of the show, so I'm good. Don't
worry. That sounds wrong.
Yeah, I did.
Whoa. Hey, Triple X.
Yeah, I was saying, that's a different type of Triple X. Lewis is going to need the lube after this match, so.
For sure.
All right, I'll start hot and heavy. Here we go. AMW appears to come out to the ring with some handcuffs. They have that's been a part of the rivalry. Triple X has kind of handcuffed AMW to the ring during some of their matches and kind of some of their attacks. And I wonder if those will come into play. I wonder if the handcuffs will be used in this match. But to start the match, they kind of have a slap exchange as both teams kind of go at it. As the camera, the production in this match was kind of weird because I feel like the camera was kind of off on some spots. But to start off, they kind of missed the opening slaps. But Storm and Daniels start things. They kind of do the tag rules. I don't love that in a cage match, but I guess I get it. Each guy kind of gets a few shots in, but they quickly tag their partners in. Primetime and Harris trade punches before Skipper gets two big knees and a snapmare in. Skipper then taunts as Storm, taunts at Storm, allowing Harris to fully recover and hit a full Nelson slam. Storm gets tagged in, and they hit a double back body drop on Skipper. Daniels then comes into the ring to even the odds, and they go for the same move, but Daniels actually gets his boots up and kicks them both down. They then overwhelm him and kind of ram him into the cage. Storm then nails a brutal clothesline on Skipper and chucks him into the cage. He then pushes Daniels' face into the steel, and Daniels actually comes up bloody, so we've got our first spot of blood. And it's really deep cut, I noticed, during this match, because he's bleeding pretty good out of the cut that he has on his head. But Storm then tags Harris back in, and he rakes Daniels' face against the cage as well. Skipper then comes in illegally and saves Daniels. They then start to double-team Harris and Skipper wear them down. Daniels then eventually gets back up and spits at Storm. Storm then comes in after him and gets a few shots in before the ref takes him back to his corner. Primetime is still kind of wearing down Harris when Harris takes him down and then catapults him into the corner where he actually makes contact with the cage. Both men then get tags in, and Storm really gives it to both Triple X members. A&W then looks to be going for the death sentence, but Daniels actually breaks it up. Harris then comes off the top with a crossbody. Harris then charges Skipper, but he picks him up and rams him into the cage. Skipper then handcuffs Harris to the post and rakes his face against the steel. Harris is now bleeding. Now that Harris is kind of incapacitated with the handcuffs, they focus on double-teaming Storm. While they're taking it to Storm, Daniel shows the key to Harris before driving it into Storm's head, which I thought was a really nasty spot. They then pick up Storm and throw him into the cage. Storm is now bleeding as well. Triple X then hits a Dominator elbow drop kind of combo move, but it only gets two. Skipper is then holding Storm for Daniels to hit a flying clothesline, but he actually ends up hitting Skipper. Storm then hits a spear on Daniels and gets the key to Harris. Harris then uses all the energy he's gained by kind of resting up to wail on Triple X. He hits an awesome spinebuster on Daniels at one point. Harris then gets Daniels in a vertical suplex, and he actually holds him up there and rams him into each side of the cage. I thought that was really awesome. And then after he does that, he actually does the suplex and lands him on the ground. But that only gets two. Skipper then hits he goes for a spinning back kick but misses. And then he actually hits a belly-to-belly on Harris. Triple X then goes for their powerplex double team and hit it, but it only gets two. Storm then goes back up and decks Daniels and hits a neckbreaker on Skipper. He then rams Daniels into the cage once again before AMW hits the heart attack, but that only gets two. After trading some shots back and forth, Triple X is able to grab Harris and kind of chuck him up against the cage. Triple X then actually hits AMW's move, the death sentence, on Harris, but that still only gets two. They then try to go for it again, but Skipper starts to climb to the top of the cage this time to hit it. Before he can get there, though, Storm breaks out of Daniel's grasp and catches Skipper on the top rope, where he hits a brutal power bomb from the top rope. I thought that was really good, but that still was only good for two. Daniels then hits Angel's Wings on Storm. That still only gets two. Harris and Daniels then ascend to the top of the cage, battling the whole way until Daniels is eventually knocked down. Skipper had kind of been climbing in the background the whole time, but nobody or Harris never noticed. And he hits probably the most famous move in TNA history, where he tightropes the top of the cage and Hurricanranas him off the top of the cage to the mat. I'm going to stop right here. Jake, what did you think of seeing this spot for the first time?
It was pretty crazy. It's one of the few that I've actually seen. The little bits of TNA I've seen, like, it's like I don't really like know if I actually remember like who it was or something, but it's just I feel like it's something that they played so much that I've probably just seen it, you know, just online somewhere before. But it was pretty sick. And the thing I really enjoyed about it is that it didn't seem completely like contrived to set it up, which is something you really go with, you know, with spots like this, is that it's very easy to make it seem like the guys are working together to set it up and everything. I didn't think it came off that way, which is really awesome. But it's crazy, like, especially when you think that they're it always amazes me when guys do this for, you know, a crowd of, you know, how many people are in the Impact Zone or whatever, like a couple hundred. Like, just the fact that they're willing to do this, it kind of shows how dedicated they are to what they're doing, to be willing to do this for probably what's not a lot of money, not in front of a ton of people, but just wanting to go out there and do something that is going to be memorable that no one's ever done, which is kind of endearing to me. So it was sick. Like, it was awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He really puts his life on the line too, because if that goes poorly, he could have died for sure. Scott, what'd you think of this move? Don't really go into the match quite yet, but what'd you think of this famous spot?
I loved it. Like, I didn't realize this was the event for some reason. I thought this was when they were in the asylum when this happened. So when like the match started, I was like, what the hell? And then it happened and I lost my mind. Like, I was yelling, I freaked out my dog. seeing this in the match, because like Jake had said, he had just seen it through video packages, which I have as well, but like seeing it live and seeing like Elix like get up there and like he's wobbling, and I was like, holy shit, it's just, oh my god, it's gonna happen. And I just lost my mind. So I loved seeing it. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he really couldn't get his footing at first, so I was really terrified. I mean, I know obviously he hits it, but I was really terrified that he was going to bust it at one point. But, Ben, what'd you think of that spot? Give me your thoughts.
Three things sort of came through my head. One, who was the guy who even thought of it in the first place, and how crazy must that motherfucker be? Two, Was it Storm or Harris? There was sort of so much blood covering them, I couldn't. You kind of forget.
It's Harris, but, I believe.
It's Harris, right? So, at what point does Harris go, yeah, okay, I'll take that. That seems a good idea. And three, and one of the very early pods, I always remember this point that Jake made. He's on about Skipper. He was like, you know, we go on about how smooth AJ is as a wrestler, and Skipper is not. Skipper's like this jerky, you know, sometimes it, sometimes it doesn't. And I actually think that's what helps him here, because he isn't that smooth and that fluid. He's sort of, you know, he's waddling. It's almost like he's waddling doing the tightrope, because he loses his footing like two times before he even does it. It's absolutely, you know, we are recording this in April 2021. And 16 and a half years later, it is still one of the most insane things I have ever, ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Lewis, what do you think of the spot?
Yeah, hands down, one of the coolest things a major wrestling promotion has ever done. Like, one of the coolest spots. Like, I cannot believe none of them were hurt in that. Especially Elix, like one slip of his foot and he's just gone. He's done. So the trust Elix had to have in Harris, the trust Harris had to have in himself to not like accidentally jiggle the cage at all and kill Elix, like, it was such an amazing spot.
Yeah, I was gonna say you can't put into words enough how much Elix probably would have died if that had ended poorly. So it's so amazing, and it can't be put into words. And, but
go ahead. That's why Daniels was over there, is to like hold those two sides of the cage together so nothing shook.
You see that on the replay, don't you? Like, Harris is basically clinging on like it's a roller coaster, and and Daniel's doing the same with his leg.
Ab- absolutely. But yeah, I had to stop so we could discuss that for a little bit, but I'll keep going on in the match. I was saying, Daniels gets kind of screwed because the move he hits immediately after this, he hits an elbow drop from the top of the cage onto Harris. That's an awesome move alone, but it kind of gets put on the back burner because of the move before it. But Harris actually still kicks out of the elbow drop from the top of the cage. But Daniels then tries to go to the top again. But we eventually get this absolutely brutal Tower of Doom spot where everybody kind of ends up down on the mat and they're completely out of it for a little bit. Storm barely covers Daniels after this, and Daniels, of course, kicks out at two. Harris then goes for a slam, but he can't get him up as his back kind of gives out after all the damage he's taken. Skipper then goes for the play of the day. Harris then reverses that and tries to go for the catatonic. Skipper reverses that, and they both kind of ram each other into the cage. Daniels and Storm then trade some big strikes, and they battle to the point where both of them are on the top rope. Daniels eventually knocks Storm off, and Harris then comes in and knocks Daniels off as well. And then they eventually handcuff Daniels, so Daniels is kind of incapacitated. Storm then damn near kicks poor Skipper's head off with the last call. I mean, he just absolutely blitzed him with it. And then AMW hits Triple X's finishing move, the Powerplex, and that is our finish. I just made the note at the end. What a match. Just absolutely incredible. 5 stars. These four guys went all out. The spot that we talked about already. Just incredible stuff. Everybody bled. Blood was all over the place. Just, I mean, this is almost as good as it gets. I'm a big tag team guy, so I love a good tag team match. And just the cage, the blood, everything came together in this match. They hit incredible moves. They put their lives on the line in some spots. So just an amazing match. And I really don't know if we're going to see a match as awesome as this for a while, but I'm glad we actually got to watch this one for sure. Scott, I'll go to you first. What'd you think of this Six Sides of Steel as a whole?
I'm echoing what you said, Logan. Five stars. Like, it was just 5 stars just off that crazy-ass move that Skipper did. But the rest of the match is just amazing. The storytelling that they do is just top-notch with the handcuffs being used at first. And then, I can't remember which one from AMW was handcuffed. Then they switch it around and Daniels is handcuffed. And he just has to watch as Skipper is the one that takes the ass beating. And then the pin. I love the use of blood. Sometimes there can be too much blood. This was just the perfect amount. And it set the tone because AMW was bleeding 5 minutes in, it felt like. And they had the crowd in the palm of their hands. I have here that a woman fan is losing her shit. You can hear her yelling over everything for AMW to get up. Every time there was a close near fall, you could hear her do it. But God, I hope these four got paid extra because I'm spoiled. If you guys ever have me on, I'm just going to compare every show to this show and probably be let down because I'm sorry. I can't put in, I was not expecting that. I listened to you guys' podcast and I'm expecting oh, I'll just shit on it for 2.5 hours. No, this was amazing. And how we were talking in the break, Lewis said that TNA was better than WWE at certain points. This might be one of those points, to be honest, just with this match, because WWE doesn't care about tag teams. They haven't in years, and the tag team main evented this match and blew the roof off of it. I implore any listener to, if you're going to watch one match, just watch this match. Hell, I'll give you my Impact Plus login. Just watch
it. Do it, man. They appreciate the advertisement there, Scott, I'm sure. Ben, what'd you think of this match as a whole?
Of all the words Scott used, I'm going to focus on one word, and that is perfect. The perfect competitors in the perfect setting with perfect storytelling, all the stars aligned. I loved the fact that, you saw Chris Harris with the handcuffs at the beginning of the match. You never saw the Triple X handcuffs. Some supreme heel dick work by Daniels and Skipper when Harris got handcuffed to the structure. It's just amazing. It's, you know, easily the number two match in TNA's history. One of the best matches I've ever seen, and it's a first for me on a Please to Be Pod. I am going to give it 5 stars. I also want to quickly point out, like you said, Logan, straight after the Hurricanrana spot, Daniels hits that amazing top rope elbow, and I love that Tanay said to the guys in the production truck, he said it over the air, stay alive. He is going to do some... He's basically going to do some freaky shit. Stay alive. Don't even think of going to the replay. You know, this is one of those matches where, you know, we do take the piss out of Don and Mike for losing their shit at the most mundane of stuff. This match, it was fully justified. I cannot say any more good things about it. Like I say, perfect.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been talking about them pouncing in their pants throughout the night tonight. They were all over this one. They love this match. It was, I mean, and I don't blame them at all, of course, but they were all over this match. I don't know how they spoke at the end.
Just, I know we had a bit of debate in our chat, and I'll mention it on the air. I personally loved the finish of this match because, like you said, it was the last call that did the real damage.
Mm-hmm.
The powerplex is basically just a fuck you to Daniels. We're going to beat your partner with your own move. And that's how we're going to end things.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a problem with the finishes because I was like, they threw haymakers and just did crazy stuff throughout the whole match, and that was how it ended. But it was the perfect ending because I like Ben just said, I thought the last call was really what was the kill shot, but they just kind of rubbed it in and shoved it right in Daniel's face, like he just said. It was a perfect ending. But Jake, what'd you think of the whole match?
Yeah, this was awesome. Actually, I went 4.5, so I don't know if that makes me like the Scrooge of this. But
damn you!
It still was. But it was a super great match. Like, the thing about this one is everything they did was so crisp and high impact at the same time. And I feel like that crispness is not something we see all the time in TNA, where I feel like we see a lot of awesome moves and guys doing cool spots and stuff, but it doesn't always like flow well. And this just flowed super well. It had had almost like a good War Games energy to it, and the brutality of it and the violence. Like, why am I blanking on his name? Daniels does the blade job, and just like little details, like where he doesn't do the blade job right in the center of his head. He kind of does it more towards the eye to make it look more natural. Stuff like that is just, it's awesome. Just the little details like that. And I like the whole story of the match, in that we've seen Triple X kind of going heel lately. And in this match, I like that they sort of beat AMW at their own game, and that I would say Triple X is considered more, you'd probably say, is more of a finesse team, and AMW are more kind of brawlers and have that sort of style. But Triple X is sort of beating them at their own game through a lot of this match by like taking it to them and being more aggressive. The key stuff was, you know, which I think is to their credit, could have been something that could have came off as hokey, and sort of if they do it the wrong way, I think could have damaged the match. But I think they do a good job of selling that Daniels and Skip are kind of being cocky about it, because they should have just thrown the key out, but instead they kind of play around with it and hit him with the key to kind of to stick it to him, but it comes back to bite him in the ass in the end, which is, I thought, was a nice little story of the match too. But everything, the big spot. I wasn't a huge fan of the Tower of Doom spot, just because I feel like it didn't fit in this match, because everything else they did felt really brutal and sort of natural. Even, like I said, the big spot where he does the tightrope, even that kind of felt like it's set up naturally, where the Tower of Doom is one of those things where it's hard to pull off and make it seem natural. And I think, I'm not against it as a spot, but I think in this match it just didn't fit totally what they were doing, because everything else just felt so, I don't want to say like realistic, but it just felt so kind of gritty. And I don't know if the Tower of Doom fit into it, but yeah, it was just an awesome war. I like the callbacks of each team doing the other one's move. It was just, it's fantastic. Like you guys said, it's an all timer. It's a classic match. It was great.
Only good for 4.5 though. Blasphemy. No, I'm just playing.
Sorry, guys.
Tough grader, Jake, tough grader. But, I'll stick with you. What did you think of the show as a whole, and what would you score it out of 10?
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to go 7 out of 10 for this one. We had a lot of solid matches, and then we had the classic at the end. Mm-hmm. But I think the two things I would say that hold us back from going any higher, which 7 is not bad, but I would say, like, the finishes a lot, even in some of the matches we thought were pretty good, like the X Division match, you know, the Kings of Wrestling match wasn't great, but I think the finish hurt that one a little bit too because it was a little goofy. I think the finishes hurt some of these matches. And then obviously all the stupid like Cookie Gate crap was just kind of like kind of a stupid thing to have. It felt weird on the show where there was just a lot of good wrestling, a lot of good matches to have this dumb shit in between. So I think if they can kind of, I think the show overall just kind of showed what they're capable of. Because like Scott said, he's coming on here and he's thinking, because we do crap on them a lot. But when you see stuff like this last match and some of the other stuff on the show and how they can put together, when they focus on their strengths, like, you know, letting the X Division guys have a good match and putting the tag teams, their two, you know, arguably their two best tag teams on display like this, that they can really put things together when they don't focus on, when they kind of cut away from some of the stupid shit that they seem so fascinated with and just take all these guys that they have that are so talented and kind of let them do their thing, that they can put together a really good show. But yeah, it's a really good show. I was pleasantly surprised by it for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Lewis, what was your thoughts on the show as a whole and a score out of 10?
As a whole, because, I mean, obviously I'm giving the cage match my second 5-star. So as a whole, with the show having a 5-star match, I'm going to go and give it a 7.5 out of 10 just because there was the hokey stuff, like the invading WWE's production. The NYC match brought it down for me. But overall, so many of the matches were so amazing, especially the ones that had no right to be as good as they were, and the finish with the Six Sides of Steel match. Overall, the best pay-per-view we've seen so far, the best night of TNA that's been put out so far. Definitely 7.5, maybe even closer to 8 out of 10.
Gotcha. Ben, what'd you think?
I'm gonna go even higher than my two friends. I'm gonna go with an 8 out of 10. And the main reason is, I think we said it in the last match, like, what are you gonna remember of this show? Are you gonna remember the Cookie Gate stuff? Are you gonna remember the NYC stuff? No, what you're gonna remember is, holy fucking shitty shit, that man just hurricanrana somebody up. That's what you're gonna remember. You've got that. You've got the fantastic X Division match and the Abyss Monty match as well. I can forgive the other two things. That's why I've not gone any higher. I'm going to stick with an 8.
Gotcha. Scott, what'd you think?
I went with a 7 out of 10 on this. I thought it was very good. Like, probably, like, from what you guys have all been saying, the best TNA show. But, like, the dumb shit that they, like Jake said, they seem to focus on is, it's like, they just can't get out of their own way, sadly. Mm-hmm. Because they're obsessed with, like, oh, WWE did this, you know. But they had 3 great matches with the 6-side match, the X Division match, and the Serengeti match. So, but there's also some shit thrown in there, so that's why I can't go any higher than a 7.
Yeah, I got you. I'm going to go with Lewis. I'm going to go 7.5. I think the good stuff was great. There's the Cookie Gate shit brings it down, of course. The Eric Watts involvement in that match brings it down, of course, and the NYC brings it down. But, like, there's so much good stuff on this, and most of the good stuff was even awesome or great or fantastic or perfect, whatever the word you want to use for it. So I'll go 7.5. I'll go right under Ben's 8, but I could easily be.
Good God.
Yeah, the angry old man. The angry old man. But yeah, I could probably get you convinced and do an 8, but I'm going to stick with a 7.5 for right now, just because I think that they're getting there, that they're understanding what they need to do to put together a pretty good pay-per-view, because they were sorely lacking in our last pay-per-view effort. So they definitely brought the goods for this one, no doubt about it. But I'll stick with Scott. Well, I'm going to just go through these awards. I went on MVP. I went with every participant in the cage match. Is that pretty much what everybody else did? Or did anybody give it to somebody specific?
I stuck with the cage match participants.
Yeah, I went with the cage. I went with the four guys in the cage match.
Yeah, same here.
Okay. Yeah, I figured everybody kind of went with all four guys, because nobody really. No, you can't not give it to. You can't give it to one guy and not give it to the other three. So, LVP, I went with Savage. Scott, who'd you go with?
Disco Inferno.
Gotcha. All right. Ben, who'd you go with LVP?
LVP, whoever came up with the Triple H and Vince skit and the whole Cookie Gate thing. Like I said, I like the idea, but the execution was just horrible.
Yeah, I gotcha. Lewis, who'd you go for LVP?
I went with Tracy because she was used way too much and all of it was stupid.
not a bad one.
High in the sky.
No, even that, it's so stupid.
Jake, who'd you go with for LVP?
Out with the NYC.
Gotcha. All right. Match, I'm assuming everybody went with the cage, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And moment, I'm assuming everybody went with the tightrope spot.
Has to be.
Like I told y'all last night, this is the easiest awards I've ever done. Express Lane. Jake, who'd you go with in your Express Lane tonight?
I'm going to go with AJ because he carried that match. Also, Saban looked good in his. Easily both tag teams for the main event, too.
Mm-hmm. I got you. Lewis, who'd you go with in your Express Lane?
I went with Christopher Daniels' singles career because I'm hoping he sprouts off and does some amazing stuff there.
Gotcha. Ben, who'd you go with your Express Lane?
Anybody who was in the tag main event, anybody, either Saban or Williams for the X Division match and Abyss and Monty, I am going full positive.
You're doing the anti-Sean Kidd. You're putting 8 people in the Express Lane instead of the exit lane.
I pretty much shit on everything to do with it. like I said before, this is almost like a good reward, good behavior for me. So yeah, accentuate the positives while we're here.
And Scott, who'd you have in your Express Lane? Who'd you have kind of going on the way up?
I got AMW and Monty. Hopefully now that AMW has vanquished Triple X, we can see them going after the tag titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the exact two that I had. I had AMW and Monty. Exit lane, Scott, who do you kind of see going on the way down?
All 5 in the NYC match, including Jacqueline. Like, because TNA doesn't have a women's division, so it's like, I guess she's just going to be a special rep for the rest. And hopefully Randy Savage. Hopefully, I don't know if he shows up anymore, but I sadly don't want to see him anymore.
Yeah, I gotcha. Ben, who'd you have?
He doesn't turn up anymore, Scott. You're okay. I went. As you boys in the last pod said, you can have people like Nash and Hall who take the money, but at least are entertaining. He's just taking the money.
Lewis, who'd you have in your exit lane?
I had 3 LK. Specifically, like, they lost the tag match, so hopefully they're out of the tag title hunt, and the stuff with the WWE stuff was just so stupid, so hopefully they're on the way out. Not Truth, just the group 3LK.
Yeah, I gotcha. Jake, what'd you have?
Let's do it. Yeah, Macho for sure, and BG James, why not? Fuck him.
I gotcha. I went with Savage, Johnny B. Bad, and Pat Kenny, just because I thought all those guys were terrible tonight. And in a literal sense, I went with Gilberti and Triple X as a team, because they're no longer going to be a team, so they're exiting the tag team ranks. So I don't mean that as a negative against Triple X. I'm just saying as a team, they're done, so they're exiting the highway. But we'll go on to our Great Value Award. Jake, who'd you have as your Great Value for tonight?
Maybe the greatest Great Value of all time is the Stone Cutter. That's the Great Value Diamond Cutter.
Lewis, who'd you have as your Great Value for the night?
I don't know if we have any anime fans here, but I went with Macho Man as Great Value One Punch Man, because that's all he could do.
I gotcha. Ben, what'd you have as your Great Value?
Scott Hall as Vincent Vega from Pulp Fiction.
Gotcha. Scott, who'd you have as your Great Value for tonight?
The 3LK What's Up spot.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely a good one. I went with the Elvis entrance, just the Great Value Elvis singing for the King's Wrestling. I thought it was terrible and just awful and the most Great Value of Great Value. So I definitely went with that one. That'll close up our awards. I'll go around to everybody for plugs now. I'll go to our guests first. Scott, what'd you have to plug tonight?
You can catch me on PTBN Experience with Blockbuster Rewind, as Logan said earlier, and PTBN Goes to the Couch. We're now covering Falcon and Winter Soldier, and I can be found on Twitter at Scott_Shiflet. And I just say thank you guys for having me tonight. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, you were a great guest, Scott. We'll definitely have you back. Well, I'm glad you got to come off with us tonight. Ben, what you got to plug?
So we have got the newest episode of Chicken Salad, which Logan and Sean were on as my recurring guests. We also had Jake as our special guest, and we are talking WrestleMania 27. And you'll be pleased to know it is the show where Logan finally sheds his nice guy reputation. So we've also got the mega serious WrestleMania 17 versus 19 pods. As I'm talking today, WrestleMania 17 is out there. I'm guessing by the time this comes out, WrestleMania 19 will also be out. Yes, we live watched both of them in a very serious manner. There was no hijinks or buffoonery taking place there. And one last thing, over on the pop feed, you can hear the first episode of the Wrestling's Chicken Salad spin-off, which is going to be Popcorn Chicken Salad, where we're going to be live watching some really bad movies, and we begin with 1995's Mortal Kombat, ready for the new film to come out, and that's with me, Logan, and Matt Souza.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm on all of those shows with you, so I don't even have to plug anything myself.
I'm basically Andy Richter to my Conan O'Brien at the moment.
Exactly. You know. Lewis, where can people find you?
People can find me at Lewis Maynard on Twitter and at Lewis_Maynard on Instagram. And in like a reverse plug, I would like to plug Impact Plus to put a 5-second rewind or fast forward double tap on their phone app, so I can more easily see the tightrope walk more and more.
Pretty please, Impact Plus. We beg you. Jake, what you have to plug tonight?
Yeah, depending on when this comes out, either it's soon to drop or has already dropped, will be the SummerSlam 2002 episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast on the North-South Connection feed, which is definitely the biggest show that I've covered on the pod so far. I'm really excited to break it down, especially having, deep dived into all the TV and everything going into it. I think it's going to be, it's obviously an all-time classic show, so it's going to be really fun to talk about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear that one for sure. I've been looking forward to hearing about that show for a while in that pod for sure. But basically everything Ben plugged, I'm on with him. The only other thing I got is from Squared Circle to the Silver Screen with the Cowboy. Me and him just watched and talked about the Scorpion King with The Rock. kind of his first foray into being the lead man in a movie. We kind of picked him apart about how he kind of gotten the hang of it quite yet, but we saw the star power evaporating from him at the same time. So, or not evaporating, his light was shining for sure. But yeah, I can be heard on all those shows Ben plugged earlier, and we appreciate all the fans that listen to us every time. I want to thank Scott for being on with us once again, and we'll see you next time.